This is Ronnie Millsap, and I'm proud to sponsor this year's ACB Radio coverage of the 2007 American Council of the Blind Convention.
From Minneapolis, Minnesota, this is live coverage of the 46th Annual ACB Convention. Now, here are your hosts, Chrissy Cochran and Marlena Lieberg.
Greetings, one and all, and welcome indeed to the convention. Now then, let's see what we have. Wait a minute. Bear with me a moment. I'm looking for the convention update for the moment. The entertainment, by the way, today is Matt Arthur.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
That should be it. Give it a go.
From Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Someone's misnamed a file, folks. Someone's misnamed a file.
Now, here are your hosts, Chrissy.
Oh, well. Not anything I can do about that. It said it was a Thursday convention update, but hey, it wasn't. Never mind. Bear with me. Let's go to the entertainment and hear Matt Arthur. He's playing country music at the moment.
Always be yourself. Listen to the voice behind the dream. It may be our good Lord trying to tell you something. Remember to be a friend to everyone you meet. And love your family. And you will be everything you are expected to be. Thank you. Thank you.
I
suppose I should liven this up a little bit, huh? I'll do another one off of my CD the way I see it. This is called A Conversation with God. I don't know. God, I know this whole world's not perfect, and that we are all your children. We are here in this place together. I know you want us to appreciate this world around us. God, I thank you for all that you have done for us, and for sending your only son to die for our sins. I'm reminded of everything you've given us. Every time I stand out under that hot sun, and I feel the grass beneath my feet, I hear the wind blow through the trees, and the birds singing their song. It makes me want to continue on down the cold road of life. Yeah, I live if it's worthwhile. I believe everything will be all right.
Well, good morning, everyone. This is Marlena. I'm arriving a little earlier today than I have been all week.
No.
And,
how about that?
Yeah.
Would you like a program?
Well, sure. Let's see if I can read with one hand and hold the microphony with the other.
Sorry.
All right. Let me find it here. This is Thursday, July the 5th. The 8 a.m. entertainment is Matt Arthur from Evandale, Montana.
Oh.
Guitar, keyboard and vocal, and he does original music. At 8:30 a.m., the Pledge of Allegiance will be led by Sue Lesperance, Durward K. McDaniel, first timer from Columbia, Indiana. I actually met her. She's a very nice lady.
Uh-huh.
The invocation is from a Muslim representative who is invited. So I guess we weren't sure at the time the program was printed that the person would be here. At 8:35, we have ACB business, reports, resolutions, and amendments. The presiding officer is Donna Seliger, ACB secretary from Des Moines, Iowa. At 9:15 a.m., we have the executive director's report, Melanie Brunson, American Council of the Blind, Washington, D.C. At 9:45 a.m., where's our accessible money? That's a very good question. And it's Jeffrey A. Levitsky, attorney for the ACB Washington, attorney for ACB Washington, D.C. At 10:15, we have a break. And at 10:30, overview of the Private Rehabilitation Center. And that will be with Kate Gathwell. Excuse me if I'm pronouncing her
name.
Yeah,
I think it's Gathwell. I had a look at it.
G-A-T-H-W-O-L. Kate Gathwell.
Gathwell.
Community Specialist Program Manager, Vision Loss Resource, Minneapolis, Minnesota. At 10:50 a.m., ACB Business, reports, resolutions, amendments. 11:50 a.m., announcements, and we'll turn the page. And then after the announcements, we will adjourn. So that is what's up for today. I want to give listeners a little bit of, I'm going to hand Chrissy back her program here. I want to give listeners a little bit of a feeling for the ACB auction last night. I was there for a period of time.
Naturally, you would pass.
I was playing table tennis and stuff and trying that out. But,
well, I bought nothing for myself but something for Gary.
What did you buy?
I bought Gary the Board Guy a valued $60 bottle of wine, and I got it for $30.
Woo!
Yes.
Because normally at auctions you sort of go over the top because you get outbid somewhat.
Yeah.
So
hey,
that is wonderful, dear. I like it.
Gene Mann from New York got a Braille Note Empower for just about half the price.
Ooh.
Yeah. Window Eyes was sold for, I think somebody got that for around $420, $450.
Wow.
Yeah. We had a lot of great items.
They really were. Gosh.
One of the cool items, of course, these are all cool, but one of the uniquely cool items was a donation from Florida called Billy Bob. And Billy Bob was a... Now, if you're listening, Florida, and I get this not quite right, you can help me out here, but Billy Bob was a 17-pound can filled with everything from moon pies to sodas to, you know, all the kind of things you hear about in our rich Southern tradition of junk food.
I wouldn't want that because it would never get through the airport stuff in my case.
Oh, no, they're shipping it.
I was going to say.
Yeah, there was
you're a bit overweight, you know.
there was a Gold Star talking microwave oven. Oh, my gosh. It just went on and on. Someone got a trip to Cancun for a week for $600.
For a week?
Wow. For a week. Ooh. Yeah.
And there was I just playing tables. Never mind.
There was a lot of good, cool. There were 13 tables of items.
Wow.
And I only stayed for maybe an hour and a half because I hadn't had dinner yet. And we also, from the Women's Concerns Committee, had girls' night out in the bar last night. And I didn't get to stop by there, but I understand that there were quite a lot of girls taking over that sports bar last night. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, so that just kind of give you a little flavor for what you don't hear in the coverage, because obviously we can't be everywhere and, you know, cover everything. But the auction, if you are coming to Louisville next year, really make time for the auction. Even if you don't buy anything, it is such great fun. We were cheering the bidders on. The higher the bids would go, we'd scream and cheer.
What do you mean it was extremely noisy?
It was extremely noisy, but extremely fun.
Great.
Yeah, Ray Campbell did a wonderful job as the auctioneer.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that is overlooked. One talks of a convention with all the business and this and that, but it's a huge fun thing as well and a huge social event.
Absolutely.
And that is 50% of it, if not a little more, I think.
Absolutely. And I want to remind listeners that the Candidates Forum will be later on at a 0 Universal, 5 Pacific, and 7 Central, 8 Eastern, 6 Mountain. I get them all in. That will go for about 2 hours. We have 2 candidates for president. We have 2 candidates for first vice president. We have now 2 candidates for second vice president. Donna Seliger has withdrawn from the race, and in addition to Doc Bradley from Texas, Brenda Dillon from Tennessee is now a candidate for second vice president.
Oh, right.
We have 3 candidates for secretary, Judy Jackson, Lynn Corral, and myself.
Certain Miss Marlene Lieberg.
Yes.
No less.
And then we have an unopposed candidate for treasurer at this point, Mike Gaudino from New York. So the elections ought to be fascinating.
I'm Matt Arthur. I'm from Ellendale.
The presidential race is going to be a horse race.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. That's going to be fun.
I can tell you that. It's going to be interesting. I won't be with you tomorrow, so this will be my last day.
I will have Rachel with me tomorrow, actually.
Yes.
That's good. Just to also let you know, in case I don't get it in, during the break, I'm hoping, if time permitting, to run an interview that Rachel did concerning Bookshare.
Great.
So that's basically what's ahead today, as well as... I mean, the evening session, I think you've answered Jeff Shang's question. I have a feeling he was going to ask me how long the Candidates Forum is likely to run.
Yeah, I would say a good 2 hours.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's good.
Because there are a lot of candidates. The caucuses, oh my gosh, they've been going on forever and ever. And, you stand in line, you know. Everybody else is sitting down and eating and relaxing. And you're standing in line there.
That always reminds me, I don't know, the word caucus always reminds me of Through the Looking Glass, where they had the caucus race. But, you know, I'm just being silly again.
Yes.
It's my job here to be silly.
Yes.
But I can't help that. Anyway, it's filling up.
Yes, the room is filling up. And I believe that we may have a controversy this morning.
Oh?
But since I don't know for sure that the resolution that I think I'm talking about will be presented this morning, I will just leave you with that titillating tidbit.
Now, you see, that is designed to keep you listening.
That's right.
Not that you wouldn't anyway.
Well, this one, you may want to call your friends.
Okay. I love. And let me just get a quick personal hi to Mary Lou here.
Oh, hello,
who is
Mary
not
Lou.
Too well, but recovering rapidly.
Oh,
I spoke
great.
To her this morning, and she sounded so much better.
Oh, well, now, Mary Lou, now only Mary Lou will know what this means. I'm not going to say I told you so.
Yeah, right. Yes.
I had a good feeling in me heart, me darling Mary Lou. So.
I did too.
So, yeah, it's a wild and crazy kind of place. But
it is.
Gosh, we're having a great time.
And there's so much that goes on. You know, there is... Like in the lobby, it's always busy. There are blind people and dogs milling about, going here, going there.
Yes.
I think we're due to start very soon because the entertainment has just finished.
We're being cheered on here.
Yeah, everyone sounds in good form.
He's still there,
but I think it's about 8:30 here.
And again, Chrissy and I are sitting up on this dais kind of thing. My purse keeps falling off, and she keeps having
to
go get
it. Can I just make
it.
A point? It's a very rocky dais sort
it
of
is.
Thing.
It is, it is.
And on Sunday night, when we announced Ronnie Millsap, everyone was sort of saying, Ronnie! And Marlena was sort of bouncing up and down and stamping her feet.
Stamping
and I feared for the thing. I feared machines were going to go toppling forward. I'm serious. I was quite scared that the whole lot was going to come crashing down.
Well, that would certainly make a memorable convention, wouldn't it?
It may not make a stream, though, my dear.
We may not have
any machines to stream with.
You're being so technical.
I thought, please stop. But no, that was great, actually.
Yeah.
We've already played that extract on Interactive.
Oh, great.
As it happens.
Oh, great. Well, I'm going to send that to Ronnie's.
So. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, it's worth it. It was really good, actually.
It's something I want for myself as well, but I'm definitely going to send that to Ronnie.
So I guess tomorrow's going to be really interesting.
Well, yes, because while we have elections, we will also be considering resolutions. And, it's just Friday is my favorite day of convention. I like that because, I love all the speakers and so on that we bring to convention, but I'm in ACB to make a difference in the lives of blind people.
Yeah, you get down to the grassroots politics, don't
you?
Yes,
and I think it's important. I really do. I think it's very important that we go about the business of making lives better for blind people. And that's what we get to, really, today and tomorrow.
And it's a democratic institution. Therefore, everyone has their say. Therefore, it can get controversial.
That's right.
And that's when things get done.
That's right.
When people, rather than sitting there festering about something, they let they say what they think. Others may disagree, and away we go. But, something good comes out of it.
We are being called to
We are. So up that and turn these down. I'm gone.
This session of the 46th Annual Convention of the American Council of the Blind. Good morning, everybody. You want to have another auction tonight? What is that? No, not yet. Somebody delivered the things I had. They were too heavy for me to carry. And I'll be darned if some people from the auction didn't come by my room at about 1:30, 1:45, and delivered them. They didn't want me to change my mind. I want to thank all of you for being there last night. It was a great event. It was a lot of fun, too. Well, we had some great entertainment from Matt Arthur. I believe he has some CDs, if anybody's interested. Up here, as you're sitting in the room at the front left of the room. And now, ladies and gentlemen, if I can have your attention, we need to come fully to order. And if you'll all please rise. I'm going to introduce to you a Durward K. McDaniel, first-timer from Columbia City, Indiana, to present the Pledge of Allegiance. Ladies and gentlemen, Sue L'Espérance.
Good morning, everyone. Okay. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you.
For the invocation This morning, we have a guest, Abdusalam Aram, from the Dar al-Hijra Islam Center here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I'll recognize him now and invite him to the podium to deliver this morning's invocation.
Good morning, everyone. I'm really honored to be part of this great event. First of all, I'll just say a few words before the invocation. In Islam, we have what we call the five daily prayers that Muslims perform every day. And those are usually done in Arabic at specific times of the day, five times a day. And then we have supplications or invocations that we make any time of the day in any language. So usually when we say prayer per se, sometimes it could mean the five daily prayers, and that's usually done in Arabic only. But in this kind of situation, we do the supplications or invocations. I must emphasize that in the Quran, the Islamic holy book, the story of a gentleman called Abdullah ibn Maktum, who was blind, has been immortalized in the Quran. And he's mentioned in chapter 80 of the Quran, and the Quran consists of 114 chapters. And this story goes that one time, in the early days of Islam, when the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, was spreading the faith and just beginning to get some followers, one time he was very busy with the leaders of Quraysh, the major tribe in Mecca at that time, trying to convince them to the new faith. And then Abdullah ibn Maktum comes to him to ask him a question, and the Prophet was very busy with this leader, so he kind of frowned upon him to kind of wait a little bit. And verses of the Quran were revealed, the beginning of this chapter, and the title of the chapter is "He Frowned," meaning the Prophet frowned, kind of chastising him for not paying attention to the one who is seeking knowledge, the one who is coming to him to seek his guidance and his faith, and paying more attention to the leaders. And so from that time on, whenever the Prophet Muhammad saw Abdullah ibn Maktum, he would say, "Welcome to the one for whose sake God has chastised me." So he will stop whatever he's doing, and from then on will pay full attention to him and welcome him. So that story that's read by all Muslims from that time, 1500 years ago, to the present day. So I just wanted to share that story with you. And when it comes to the supplication, in Islam usually Muslims raise their hands with their open palms and just repeat Amin or Amen, which is the same in Judaism and Christianity. So any part of the invocation that you like, or to just keep it going, you may keep saying Amen for Amin. And, you know, if you wish, raise up your hands. If you don't wish, no problem. So now I'll just proceed with this supplication. In the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice, in thee I seek sanctuary. O possessor of pardon and good pleasure from wrong and enmity, from the changes of time and the recurrence of sorrows, from the striking of mishaps and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness, from thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in thee, my Lord, from temptations, and I seek protection in thy sovereignty from the injustices of the sovereign. So accept my prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. Exalt me in my people and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For thou art God, the best guardian, and thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O God, I am quiet before thee on this day of mine and on all days that follow it. And I devote my supplication sincerely to thee, addressing myself to thy response. Exalt me with thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. Protect me with thy eye, which never sleeps. Surely thou art the all-forgiving, all-compassionate. O God, peace is one of your attributes. Bestow peace upon us. Create understanding among your servants. You have made us into nations and tribes, that we may know one another and not despise one another. Protect our nation and uphold the tenets of peace, justice, and equality for all. Amen. Amen. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity, and I really wish you a successful conference.
Thank you very much. This morning, on the agenda, let me call to your attention, especially for those who may be new or haven't been to a convention either in person or heard it on the radio, we're going to take care of some business between now and 9:15. Then I turn the platform over to our secretary, Donna Seliger, and we have program.
Mr. President?
Just a moment. I'll recognize you in just one moment.
Okay,
we have program until 10:15. We have a break. We have one more speaker. And then at 10:50, we will take care of business until noon today. So a little bit of change. And so for those of you who are really delighting in the business of ACB, be sure and be here at 10:50 once again. Who seeks the floor?
Doug Stipp from Minot, North Dakota, a member of the North Dakota Association of the Blind.
Yes, Doug, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. President. I realize that time is of the essence, so I will try to make my remarks brief. I do want to publicly thank this convention body for passing Alan Peterson's resolution dealing with the substantial gainful activity limits regarding Social Security. I do want to thank this body for passing that last year. And also, I wanted to just make a brief comment about the auction. It was absolutely incredible. It was a wonderful fundraiser. I hope you do it again next year.
Thank you, Doug, very much. For those of you who may not know, Doug and Alan wrote this resolution, got it passed in North Dakota. They brought it to us last year. We adopted it here. And with any luck, we're going to persuade Congress, maybe not this year, maybe not next year, but some year, to do something about allowing younger recipients of SSDI a higher substantial gainful activity income before they're penalized.
Mr. President.
Yes.
Alabama will have a change in its alternate for today.
Okay.
The alternate will change from Rhonda Trott to Judy Stewart. Also, I want to remind everyone that we still have raffle tickets available, and every dime that you purchase on this ticket will go toward the assistance of the Braille Forum to help make it bigger and better than it is today.
Mr. President.
Thank you very much. Who seeks the floor?
This is Darian Slayton Fleming from Oregon.
Yes, Darian.
I just want to put in another plug for our talking microwave. If you bid on the talking microwave last night and did not win it, we have chances to win one from Oregon. The tickets are $1 each, or 6 tickets for $5. We'll be having our drawing at our state convention in October, and it will be shipped to you free of charge if you win.
Oh.
And you can see James Edwards in Oregon, or John Fleming or Darian Fleming in Viva, and we hope to sell a whole bunch more tickets. Thank you.
And Mr. Jerry, President, is that the Hamilton Beach microwave?
Yes, it is.
All right. Thank you very much. The gentleman?
Mr. President?
Yes?
George Halliday from Pennsylvania.
Yes, George.
Mr. President, on behalf of the Pennsylvania Council of Blind Affiliate, we would like to give to the Treasury of ACB $1,000.
All right.
Mr. President.
Thank you very much, Mr. President of Pennsylvania and Pennsylvania Council. Yes? Who's the lady?
Mr. President.
State your name, please.
Mary Stiff from Minot, North Dakota.
Yes, Mary.
I do feel in my heart that all the people that volunteered to run around last night, I feel they should have a great round of applause. They worked their buttons off last night. Thank you.
Mr. President?
Yes, who seeks the floor?
This is Marlena Lieberg over at the ACB radio table.
Yes, Marlena.
Just want folks to know that right now we have 75 people joining us. And yesterday our maximum was 120 people joining us. So would everyone again say good morning, world?
Good morning, world.
Thank you from ACB Radio.
Thank you very much. You know, I've been remiss this week. I haven't thought to ask for any comments from the ACB radio listeners, and I apologize for that. I sure do hope we'll have time to work a few in this morning. Something else I keep hearing people complaining about is that we're not doing enough door prizes this year. Michael Malver, are you ready with a door prize?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
This is Dr. Milliman.
Ah, yes. Ron Milliman?
While Michael's getting ready for the door prizes, may
okay.
I make an announcement?
A little closer to the mic, please.
May I make an announcement?
Yes, you may.
Okay. Listen up, folks. I'd like to announce that as of just a few minutes ago, we hit, for this convention, annualized amounts of contributions, $5,860. All we need is just a couple more, and we can top the 6,000 mark. It's phenomenal. Fantastic. Way to go, folks. We owe every bit of it to you. Thank you.
Chris, if I may.
Thank you very much.
Chris?
Yes?
This is Robert A. Jones, Jacksonville, Florida.
Yes.
Very briefly, I'd like to ask those of us who would like to go to the breakfast tomorrow morning over at the First Baptist Church, we're looking for volunteers that would be kind enough to escort us over there and back, and we hope to be back before the assembly starts tomorrow morning. So we're planning on meeting in the lobby here at 6:30 a.m., and hope to be back before the general session starts tomorrow morning. And I will be willing to pay for the volunteers for their breakfast. So if anybody would be interested, if they could please contact me in room 2128 here at the Hyatt to sign up as a volunteer to aid those of us who would like to go over and participate in that fundraiser. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Mr. President?
And let me just say, let me remind everybody, and Bob, this is not a complaint about your breakfast, but I know, because I know you're very mindful about the business time. But maybe it's worth saying right now, excuse me, that it is my intention to begin elections promptly at 9:15 tomorrow. It's in the program, but it's always worth saying I don't want anyone to feel that they didn't know to be here for elections, but we will start that process right at 9:15 tomorrow. Michael, is that you?
That is me. Oh, wow. Okay.
All right. You're the guy everybody wants to hear from.
Okay.
What's the door prize?
Our first prize is from the Virginia Council. It's a snack basket of peanut-like items. And $50 cash.
Whoa.
The winner is Richard Lorien. Richard, are you here?
Richard Lorien? He's working?
He's
okay. Where is he working?
He's working. He's an interpreter. He's a volunteer.
Oh, yeah, I know him. Very good.
Yeah. And we've got a pink tote bag with a ticket for Saturday night's performance of 1776 at the Guthrie. Marie Keene from Chelsea, Massachusetts. She's
Marie,
not here.
They say Marie is not here. All right. I don't hear
Eric
Marie shouting
Ricky
from the back
from Rochester,
of the room.
Michigan.
So. I'm sorry, Mike. I talked over you. Who?
Erica Erke from Rochester, Michigan.
Michigan?
Mary Bartley from Louisville.
Nope, she's not in the room.
Betsy Doan from Shelton, Kentucky. Connecticut.
Betsy, are you here?
Betsy,
from Connecticut?
Are you? Jeremy Curry from Fort Wayne, Indiana. Charles Carroll from Clinton, Alabama. Jim Barnes, Yorktown Heights, New York.
I think some people must have slept in this morning.
Carolyn Hathaway from Canton, Ohio.
Yep. Carolyn, are you here? No, she's not here.
Robert Hatchie from Massachusetts. Yeah. Okay.
Ah.
Thank you very much.
All right. Very good.
Mr.
We're going
President.
To...
People are joking about Bob Hachey from Massachusetts winning a pink tote bag.
Who seeks the floor? The lady?
Brenda Dillon.
Yes, Brenda.
Good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, I would like to tell you that Lane has added up the income from last night's auction. And we raised $18,884.
I told you there were 13 tables worth of good stuff at that auction.
I'd like to thank my committee who worked so faithfully with me on that project. And I'd also like to thank all the wonderful volunteers who made last night possible. Also, we have two items bought by the same individual. They've not yet been paid for, nor have they been claimed. So if you don't, we need you to go to the registration desk. That is the Mall of America Fun Pack that has a $100 Visa card in it, and also the Chicken Little audio described movie. And if it would be acceptable at this time, I'd like to go ahead and read the sponsors for today.
That's just fine. Sure, go ahead.
Thank you, sir. The following people, let's see. First, we have a couple that were omitted. We have a gold sponsor at $100, Patricia Schroeder. Yay, Patricia. We also have a silver sponsor whose name was left off yesterday, Ed Doc Bradley. And now here we go with our list of bronze sponsors at $25 each. Billie Jean Keith, Lou Ann Williams, Kathy Blackburn, Sheila Styron, Richard Ruda, Justin Cox, Samantha Hubbard, Shirley Roberts, Lynn Roberts, Rebecca Williams, Ann Brash, Debbie Phillips, Craig Phillips, Robert Rogers, Debbie Grubb, Barbara Brown, KNG, Kathy Brockman, Sarita Holiday, Leroy Johnson, Cindy Vega, Bud Keith, Deborah Turner, Jane Cardis, Evelyn Larson, Shirley Gray, Alan Moore, Renee Zellickson, Mike Vining, Ann Byington, Michael Byington, M.J. Schmidt, Tom Bergunder, Catherine Craven, Janet Facemeyer, Ed Facemeyer, Nanita Garner, Harold Newsom, Ellen Telker, turn the page, Carolyn Kobe, David Franklin II, Naomi Sewell, Karen Eisenstadt, Susan Howell, Marion Howell, Penny Crane, Susie Davis, Lisa Drzuki, forgive the pronunciations when they're not exactly right, Ken Rogers, Carol Edwards, Norman Dahlke, Kathy Lyons, Bruce Ratke, what a volunteer, guys. Leo Healy, Diane Healy, Lori Stannard, Dolores Coombs, Karen Crowder, Rhonda Trott, David Trott, Artis Bazin, Bob Seliger, Keith Bundy, Wendy Maroney, Oral Miller, Skip Sharp, Diane Fleming, John Fleming, Jennifer Knight, Jeremy Congdon, okay. Deanna Scoggins, Bob Hache, Sue Wesley, Elaine Vining, Terry Lynn Pomeroy, Tom Toji, and Diane Bobrovsky. I would like for all the sponsors this year at every level to please stand and let's give them a big round of appreciation. And don't forget, tomorrow night at the banquet, there will be 8 drawings for 2 in each level of sponsorship. And if you are interested and have not yet made this commitment to ACB, it is not too late. While there will not be a newspaper tomorrow, if there are any additional names, they certainly will be read aloud. And your name will be included in the drawing for the new HumanWare Victor Reader Stream. Thank you very much.
Brenda, thank you very much.
As Mr. Our next, President?
Who seeks the floor?
This is Kira Larkin from Utah.
Yes.
I need to make a correction. I ran an ad in the newspaper about some greeting cards that I make. And the room number I put in there is 603, and it actually should be 630.
All right.
And so the room number in the newspaper was wrong. So
room 630 for the greeting cards, if you've read about that in the newspaper, 630. I now want to present to you for his report this year, his treasurer's report from the great state of New York and ACB's treasurer, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Mike Godino.
All right, I had to promise to be brief. This is the Treasurer's Report for fiscal year 2006. On the income side, we have budgeted $1,056,673. Our total income for the year, $1,135,625. On the expense side of the budget sheet, we have budgeted $1,056,514. Our total expenses for the year were $1,091,846. Budgeted a total excess of $159. total income in excess of $43,779. This was submitted to an auditing firm. The audit is mostly complete. We should have that end result in a matter of days. Mr. President, that is my report for fiscal year 2006.
Thank you very much, Mike. There's been a motion made to accept the report.
Second.
All right, and duly seconded. Discussion, questions for Mike? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion carries.
Thank you very much.
All right. Is Judy up here now? All right. I'll now recognize the chair of the Resolutions Committee, and we'll do a couple resolutions. Judy Jackson from Texas.
Good morning. I'm sorry. Okay, just a second. Okay, I'm getting there. I'm getting there. Is this better? Okay. 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 This is Resolution 0719. Okay. Okay. I about have this in my mouth. Is this better? Okay. Good morning. This is Resolution 0719, and it's on gasoline prices, and it's submitted by Carol Edwards. Whereas gasoline prices are near the highest they have ever been in the history of our country, and whereas in November 2006, just before and shortly after a national election, gasoline prices dropped to under $2 a gallon in some places, and since then, without any explicable cause, the price of gas has risen to over $3 per gallon, and whereas the dramatic rise in gas prices has caused a significant increase in the cost of transportation, food, and other essential goods and services, and whereas, since the majority of persons who are blind or visually impaired live on fixed incomes and the increase in the cost of goods and services caused by rising gasoline prices has had a serious impact on their daily lives, and whereas persons who are blind or visually impaired depend on public transportation in all aspects of their daily lives, and whereas the rise in gasoline prices has led to a widespread decrease in the availability of public transit services, now, therefore be it resolved by the American Council of the Blind in convention assembled this 5th day of July, at the Hyatt Regency Hotel in Minneapolis, Minnesota, that this organization work with other interested groups to achieve equitable gasoline pricing. This committee recommends a do pass.
All right. You've heard the recommendation of the committee, which has been duly seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, all
well, Mr. President.
Yes, Richard Villa.
Richard Villa, I just to need a point of inquiry. Where is this resolution going to be delivered to? I guess most of the time they have a target, but where does this go?
I think in this case, Richard, based on the wording that I heard, the resolution would go to the Resolutions Prioritization Committee, which will be formed at the end of this convention. And it would be given a score, a 1, 2, or 3, and the matter would then be referred to the Director of Governmental Affairs and Advocacy, Eric Bridges. And it would be up to him to, and Melanie and the President of ACB and so forth, to make a decision as to how to proceed with the resolution.
Mr. President.
Yes, is that
Robert
Rob Rogers?
From Ohio.
Yep.
This resolution should be scored at a -5. because it has nothing to do with politics. It's marketing. It has no business even being ruled upon. That's my feeling.
Thank you for the feedback.
Mr. President.
Yes?
Dr. Stipp, North Dakota Association of the Blind. My name
yes,
is North
Doug.
Dakota. I have considerable trouble with one part of the resolution, and that is that, that point about the majority of persons who are blind being on a fixed income, can that be substantiated by research? Is that something that can be proven by research, or is it just merely a blanket statement? I was wondering what that was doing in there. I don't doubt that we have problems paying for things simply because of income levels and that kind of thing, but that's my point of contention with the resolution.
All right. Judy, did the Resolutions Committee discuss that issue at all, or can you make any comment on that?
Only to the extent that the unemployment rate among people who are blind and visually impaired is 70%.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Roger, you're recognized.
I think it's arguable that gasoline prices are too low. I think that in Europe, where gasoline costs $8 a gallon, there's a hell of a lot better public transportation than there is here. The whole society has been screwed up by cheap gasoline and subsidized car transportation. So I'm against this resolution.
So you're speaking in opposition to the resolution,
Mr. President.
Any further discussion before we vote?
Mr. President, Ken Stewart.
Yes, Ken Stewart, you're recognized, and let's have order, please.
Yeah, my concern also is that it makes reference to public transportation. All the research and data I see shows that the higher the gasoline price goes, the more people leave their cars at home, which makes the road safer for pedestrians and increases the value of public transportation. So I think, as Roger says, the higher the gas price, the better our transportation is going to get. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We've heard some questions raised and several speeches against the resolution. I would like to ask if the maker of the resolution would care to speak in favor of it, or if anybody else would care to speak in favor of it, and then I would urge us to vote.
Just one more comment regarding paratransit. A lot of persons who are already on fixed incomes are getting subsidized with paratransit and reduced fare cards on buses. Are you able to hear me? Okay, I'm in the mic. This is Renee Zellickson, and I wanted to speak just one point against it, in that people who are on fixed incomes are already subsidized with paratransit that gets them to and from work, and they're already receiving reduced fare cards, so they're already getting some sort of subsidy. So I don't think that it would go over as well.
All right, thank you. Do we have someone to speak in favor of the motion?
Yes, I will, Mr. President.
Who is that? No, the gentleman on the microphone.
Okay. Mr. President,
yes, Jeff.
In theory, Roger and others are right. Higher gas prices should help public transportation. In practice, that is not what is happening. Even though some people are getting out of their cars, what is happening is that public transit districts, both through the loss of some government money and more especially now through higher gas prices, are across the country canceling routes. They're putting pressure on paratransit service to limit themselves. And so although we don't like to get into an issue like this, it's sort of not quite the blindness issue, it really does have a profound impact on our population, and I think we need to pass this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Are we prepared to vote, or do we need to debate further?
I'm prepared to speak for.
All right. I hear no more calls for the floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no.
No.
The resolution is defeated. Do you have one more short one, Judy?
Yes, sir. Just give me one moment, Mr. President, to pull it up. This is Resolution 0705, Window Eyes Training Material, and this came from the California Council of the Blind. Whereas GW Micro is one of the leading manufacturers of screen reading software for people who are blind or visually impaired, and whereas Window Eyes is one of the most widely used screen reading software programs for people who are blind or visually impaired, and whereas GW Micro recently released Window Eyes 6.0, and whereas no audio tutorials exist on either tape or CD for this release, and whereas people who are blind or visually impaired need accessible audio tutorials in order to familiarize themselves with the program or new features, now, therefore, be it resolved by the American Council of the Blind on this fifth day of July in convention assembled at the Hyatt Regency Hotel in Minneapolis, Minnesota, that this organization strongly urge GW Micro to develop and produce accessible audio tutorials on tape, CD, via the Internet, and DAISY format.
Madam Chair, I would like to speak in opposition of this resolution.
Just a moment. Judy, what is the recommendation of the committee?
The recommendation of this committee is a do pass.
All right. And so the recommendation of the committee is a pass. I have now heard a second. Okay, Robert, now I recognize you.
Okay. I'd like to speak in opposition of this resolution. I'm a distributor for GW Micro. It's very apparent that the person that wrote this resolution doesn't know their software very well. First of all, the current release is 6.1, and there is a tutorial on the installation CD that comes with the software, and there's also a Braille reference manual. So I urge you to defeat this resolution because it's full of false information. Thank you.
Mr. President.
Yes. Marlena, is that your voice I hear?
Yes.
All right.
I also would like to speak in opposition to this resolution. And I know that GW Micro have recently contracted with someone, and the training is being even further developed. And I think that we need to really check our facts before we proceed forward with recommending a due pass on this.
Very good. Thank you.
Mr. President, Janelle Edwards.
Yes, Janelle. For or against?
I'm against, but I was going to...
All right. Before you speak, let me just ask if a person who wishes to speak in favor of the resolution would get to a microphone, and now you're recognized.
Well, I was going to propose what I would hope they would perceive as a friendly amendment, that some people need the audio tutorials, because I believe a lot of other people do not believe we need the audio tutorials, or if not, I would propose it as a formal motion.
Yes, we would consider that a friendly amendment.
Thank you. I am also opposed, but that's all I need to say, because the rest has already been stated. Thank you.
Mr. President, may I ask?
Yes, yes.
Janelle, where, in the clause, do you, instead of saying, I'm looking to see where exactly. I found it. And you would want it to be in this clause, whereas people who are blind or visually impaired need... insert the word some accessible, or I mean not some
where,
accessible.
Some people need audio tutorials.
Some people need, okay. All right. I found where it would go. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. President?
The friendly amendment is going to be adopted by a general consent, so we won't have to vote on the amendment. I've heard no objections to it, so we're going to adopt that by general consent. Jeff, is that you I hear?
Yes, a comment and a question, perhaps for Marlena. In California, we were primarily concerned when we adopted this resolution on users that would require or would need audio tape, cassette tape. Do you know whether, when you say the training is going to be further developed, whether that is going to be included?
I'm certainly not a spokesperson for GW, but it is my understanding that yes, that the audio will, the tape will be included as well as the CD.
Okay, because at the time it was the understanding of the makers of that resolution that that was not the intention of GW Micro. That is obviously an important fact which may have changed since the time those who wrote that resolution did so.
I'm just giving you what I believe to be the answer, and maybe we need to check with GW Micro.
All right, very good. We have a motion to adopt this resolution. We've had debate. Are we prepared to vote? All right, all in favor of the resolution say aye. Opposed say no.
No.
The resolution is defeated. Let us now move into the informational portion of our program this morning. Oh, Carla, I'm sorry. Before we do that, I'll recognize Carla Rushable for some announcements.
Good morning. Wasn't that a great auction last night? I got what I came for. I got Marjorie's quilt. It was wonderful. Okay, I have some announcements for you. First of all, a reminder of caucuses today. The Florida, I've lost you. No. Sorry about that. Let's see. Florida is at noon. I'll have to look the room up. Southwest is at 5 p.m., and it is in room G, Greenway G. The Mid-South Caucus is in Greenway D and E, also at 5. Missouri is in Greenway I and J, also at 5. Okay. And in the cafe tonight, the entree is hot turkey with oven-roasted potatoes and gravy. We can have a good meal as we go from caucus to caucus. Also, Pam Shaw wants me to announce that she will be taking reservations for banquet tables up until 2 p.m. today. Just to remind you of the process for reserving a table, you need to get together, if you wish to reserve a table, get together a list of 8 people who will be sitting at your table. Then go to the information desk and give that complete list to Pam Shaw. She needs all of the names so as to ensure that there are not 2 seats reserved for one person. Sometimes we might like to have 2 dinners, but we can't do that this time. Banquet tickets are also still on sale at registration. Tickets are $38, and you may select one of 4 entrees: roast beef, walleye, which is fish, chicken, or vegetarian. Purchase those tickets at registration. Again, just a reminder on those tables, that deadline is 2 p.m. today at the information desk. I want to remind you also that the MCI hands-on audio description workshop for today is canceled. That was held on Monday night. If you are interested in Braille music, the National Library Service is holding a music services focus group at 5 p.m., and you are encouraged to attend if you are a person who is interested in the kinds of services that are provided by the Music Reference Section at NLS. They want to hear from you. It will be in Greenway C. There also is a discrepancy between the calendar in the program and the actual listing in the program for the DKM First Timers reception. And I thank the person who drew that to my attention. That reception will be held in 2411. The listing for the Executive Director Suite is the one that's correct. I think that is all of my announcements at this time.
Carla,
Mr. President, I will look up the Florida room and be back in just
Carla,
a second.
Carla, I have the Florida room. It's Florida's caucus is today at noon in Greenway H.
Yes, okay. That coincides with my memory, but I just wanted to be sure. Thank you, Marlena.
You're welcome.
All right, and that concludes my announcements for this early morning session.
All right. Thank you, Carla, very much. I now would like to lead us into the informational part of our program this morning. A lot of great people to hear. To preside this morning is a person who I've saved my little acknowledgement for until now. Ladies and gentlemen, Donna Seliger has been a truly wonderful secretary to work with. Any task that she feels needs to be done or that she'd like to help out with, she's there to do it. And I can honestly tell you without any reservation whatsoever that in these past 6 years, Donna, without exception, has put her needs last and ACB's first. Ladies and gentlemen, Donna Seliger.
Good morning, ACB. Well, we're just about to the end of our convention. Has everybody had a good time? Minneapolis is a wonderful city. I hope we're invited back again someday. Before I begin, I was handed a note, and I'd like to read it. It says, would anyone at the Millennium be willing to share their laundry facilities with me at the, well, with a couple ladies from the Hyatt. And please call 1123 or 635 or call Judith Edmond at 757-672-9178. So if you want to have a couple ladies at the help them out at the Hyatt so they can be clean again, get them a call. Before we begin this morning, I think I must tell you the truth. We all know Ron Milliman. Well, I have to tell you about him. He went on a trip. Ron does a lot of traveling, and he speaks at a lot of different conferences. He came home from a long trip, and Palma met him at the door in his sexy little nightgown, and she said, "Tie me up and do whatever you want." So Ron tied her up and went fishing. Now, it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you ACB's one and only Executive Director, Melanie Brunson. I don't know what we'd do without her.
Good morning. Boy, to follow a story like that. You know, I'm a little bit intimidated by being part of the informational part of the program, especially this late in the convention. I had a huge cup of coffee this morning, and I only hope that, well, I'm going to give you a disclaimer or two in my role as attorney, okay? I'm not sure which battery is lower, my Braille notes or my own. I got in so late last night I completely forgot about checking it, and unfortunately it's saying battery is critical. So I'm warning you because so's mine. And as a result, if I say something that doesn't make any sense, you can decide which you want, which machine you want to blame for it, okay? There is, though, ladies and gentlemen, a lot that I'd like to tell you about that's gone on in the last year. Some of it you've already heard from other speakers, and some of it you still will as we progress through the rest of the convention. But I'd like to touch on a few highlights of what has gone on in the ACB National Office and also around the country as a result of the combined energies and efforts of all of you working with our office. And I hope that we have supported your efforts well. I am encouraged by the reports that I've gotten and the comments that I've heard this week. I hope all of you will feel free to give us feedback as we go through the year on how we're doing in implementing your agenda for ACB, because that's what we're here for. Chris introduced much of the staff to you earlier in the week, and many of you have had a chance to meet and talk with them. And I think they've done a great job here at the convention. I want to mention to you one person who has not been mentioned yet, and part of the reason for that is that she is the lone person who has been left manning the store while we're all here. We were very fortunate at just around Memorial Day to find a new person to join our support staff. She is a Washington, D.C. native and is a very pleasant person, a very capable person to work with, and has joined our staff and fit in very well. And she's back at the office managing things while we're all here. And her name is Natasha. So some of you will get a chance to talk with her when you call the office. And I hope that she will get a chance to get to know ACB a lot better as the weeks progress. One of the highlights of my personal year since we last spoke in convention was an opportunity that I had as a result of a recommendation from Oral Miller. Last December, December 7th, to be exact, I left and went on a trip to Tokyo, Japan. I was asked to go to Tokyo to present a paper on the status of digital of audio description and closed captioning in the United States. And it was for a national conference of broadcasters in Japan. And I went and presented the paper. They also had me stay for about 5 days. It was only a one-day conference. And they took me sightseeing. I got to see a lot of Japanese culture. I got to eat a lot of really good food, some of which was cooked and some of which was raw. But it was, by and large, very good. And I got to meet a lot of really nice people. I went on a tour of some rehabilitation facilities for people who are blind, the Tokyo Lighthouse. And I got a massage from a blind masseuse. I was interviewed in Japan. They have a weekly newspaper that is published just for blind people. And they did a story about the conference, and they interviewed me and the president of the Japanese Federation of the Blind. So we had a good time doing that. Did a lot of sightseeing. I had a really great trip. One of the other fun things for me was I got to use accessible currency. Japanese currency is different sizes. And it was fun to get a chance to use it. I unfortunately wasn't there long enough to get a lot of experience getting used to it, but it was fun to see, and I brought some back. We, as I said, we talked with them about closed captioning and audio description. They're trying to get more of that, of both of those in their country. And so we compared notes, and we decided that what we needed to do was do a lot more cooperation internationally to try to make the broadcast industry more aware of our needs and our concerns about television and radio broadcasting. I hope, and I think we're going to do some work on this in the forum, but I hope you all realize that in 2009, your current televisions, if you don't have high definition, your broadcast will go away. Because the digital transition is supposed to be made on, I think it's February 1st, 2009. February what? 17. Okay. Why on earth they did that, I don't know. But we are working very hard to make sure that couple of things happen. One of them is the government is subsidizing the availability of some set-top box converters so that you don't have to run out and buy a new TV. They want to make sure that people on low incomes have the ability to have access to the digital broadcasts with using their current sets. They need to be accessible. And guess what? They have not thought about that when they put out the request for bids. So we and the American Foundation for the Blind have been working very closely in coalition with the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights and some other folks to make sure that something's done about that. We're also wanting to make sure that they don't forget about audio description. The SAP channel, as we know it now, will go away in the digital realm. However, each channel will have the capacity to have up to, I think it's 4 channels, like sub-channels. And we are working to make sure that the networks and the broadcasters know to reserve one of those for passing through closed captioning and audio description. And by the way, that's our other concern with the set-top boxes is that when the original specifications were put out for the design, they didn't include the capacity to pass the SAP signal through. And the stuff that is currently being broadcast on that. So that's an area where we've been very active and expect to continue to be so. Fortunately, we are getting the ear of some in the telecommunications industry. And one of the things I want to put a plug in right here now before I forget or before one of the batteries dies is at the legislative seminar the other day, we talked to you about the Coalition on Accessible Telecommunications. This is a group that is growing every day, and I would like to encourage any of the affiliates in ACB who wish to join it. I will put out the information about how to join it as soon as we get back, but the more organizations we have in this coalition, the more clout we will have with the broadcast industry, the FCC, and the telecommunications industry as a whole, because that's what we need in order to get these issues dealt with in a timely and in an effective manner. And so I would encourage organizations, we've got, what have we got, Phil or Eric, if you're in the room, and I can hear you, 50, 60 organizations, we need more. Phil is saying he thinks it's higher than that now, but that's okay. The more, the merrier. So we're going to put out information on how affiliates can join, state affiliates, special interest affiliates, individuals. We just need lots of power, and we got power in numbers. So please sign up. If you don't see the email and you're interested, please call Phil at the office. We can get the information to you. We'll put it in the forum as well. So look for it. If you don't find it, give us a buzz. We need to get as much participation and as much clout behind this as possible. One of the other telecommunications areas before I leave that is emergency warnings. As many of you know, we have been a proponent of audible emergency warnings since audible emergency warnings came in, or since those stupid ones that they started scrolling across the screen came into being. And right now, all you get is a little beep that tells you, go find out what the beep is for somewhere else. There's something going on, but we're not going to tell you what it is. You got to go find somebody else to tell you. The Federal Communications Commission has gotten interested in this, but they're not convinced yet that the technology exists to do it. So we have been working with a number of folks in an advisory capacity. There are others in ACB that have been working as well. WGBH in Massachusetts has a grant to work on the issue. There are some other folks within the telecommunications field that are working on it. And I have been serving on a number of the advisory committees that are trying to both make the technology, make the case for how to do it, make the technology effective, and then convince the telecommunications industry as well as the government that it can be done. A lot of progress is being made, so I expect that you will hear some news about that within the next year, and I hope you'll stay tuned for that because it's a huge issue. ACB has been working in a number of coalitions across the country. One of the most active and quite honestly fun, Dayal Mohammed initiated, and that was a project with the National Disability Rights Network to improve the quantity and the quality of training for poll workers, so that on election day, they know what to do when somebody with a disability comes in to vote. And they do it correctly. We have actually helped to write training materials that the National Disability Rights Network offices are trying to distribute throughout the election communities in their jurisdictions around the country. And I hope that people who are interested in what's going on in their local areas with regard to both the right to vote and the proper exercise of that right will check in with them to assist, let them know that they're available to help train people on how to meet the needs of voters who happen to be blind or visually impaired. One of ACB's legislative imperatives last year involved emergency preparedness and called for the inclusion of people with disabilities in every phase of emergency management, including all levels, both government, both before emergency, at the planning stage, during emergencies, and after the disaster. We wanted to ensure that there was temporary housing that was actually accessible to people with disabilities. We wanted to ensure that there was no discrimination in the availability of services, particularly one of our big concerns was the availability of shelter to people with using service animals and guide dogs. And we wanted to ensure that the Federal Emergency Management Agency had a disability services coordinator. The legislation that we supported actually passed Congress last year. And I can tell you that that passage was largely due to the activity of people in this organization who helped to lobby for it. So thank you very much. I'm also happy to tell you that the coordinator of disability services was just hired by FEMA, and it's a person who is friendly to ACB and understands our concerns pretty well. And some of you may remember her because she spoke at our legislative seminar last year. It's a lady named Cindy Daniels who has been involved in emergency management in a variety of capacities and has a fairly in-depth expertise, but the good news is we also have her ear. So we're pleased by that development. In the area of pedestrian safety, there's been a lot going on. We've kept Phil really busy. And I have to tell you that even when Phil was part-time, he was in the office pretty much full-time. So we've kept him pretty busy over the last couple of years, and there's been quite a bit of activity. Some of you have worked with him to help you support your efforts to get accessible pedestrian signals in your areas, and he's still willing to do that. Phil actually, you know, Phil is pretty quiet. But interestingly enough, somebody's decided to make him talk. Phil actually conducted a training for a bunch of traffic engineers from all over the country a couple of months ago. He's also working with the D.C. Department of Transportation. They've gotten really serious about pedestrian safety lately because there have been a number of pedestrian vehicle accidents. And so they've decided to embark on a major pedestrian safety initiative, and we got Phil right in there to start saying, and when you do, don't forget about audible traffic signals. So we're hoping that we will get some in D.C. fairly shortly. He's also been working on one of our most pressing and increasingly significant issues, and that is the issue of the safety concerns surrounding the increased number of hybrid vehicles that we affectionately call quiet cars. There are quiet cars. There are a number of organizations both within the transportation industry and within the advocacy community that have begun to take note of this issue, and we're right there in the midst of it. In the area of Medicare and Medicaid coverage, some of you are aware that the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services made a pronouncement that really annoyed us last year. They decided that they were not going to cover any low-vision aids. Period. End of question. We said, guess what, folks? That ain't the end of the question. And we are working very hard to persuade them that kind of a ban is totally unacceptable, inappropriate, and just isn't going to happen over the long term. We're also working on other issues related to increased care. There's been some movement lately on dental care coverage for Medicaid recipients, and I know that was the subject of a resolution a few years back, so we are keeping some close tabs and trying to push that. A couple of states have started to do it. I might have to look up which ones they are. But just a week or two ago, there was an announcement that was going to start happening. I believe it was in Maryland. So there's a lot going on. We're trying to keep tabs on the progress of the prescription drug program and help to influence working out the bugs. There are a number of issues that we have been working on, as you can tell. I don't know how much time I have, so I don't want to get you too far off schedule, but I just want to tell you that, as you can see, we have a lot going on. There are copies here, and they will be available, I think, at the President's meeting of the Rehabilitation and Training White Paper, which we helped the Rehabilitation Task Force to put together, and we have been disseminating it within the organizations that have meetings on subjects related to that, both governmental and non-governmental, so that we can help spread the word about what ACB believes to be appropriate in rehabilitation practices. We will continue to do that, and I hope that you, the affiliates, will join us in that. I want to switch gears for a little bit and talk to you about another aspect of my particular job. I'll take off my governmental affairs and advocacy hat for a second and talk to you a little bit about fundraising. You know, we are a nonprofit organization, and although we have a wonderful funding stream that comes to us by way of the work of ACB Enterprises and Services, we also have a need to diversify our income. And we've made some really great progress on that this last year, but we need to do more. And one of the areas where I'd like to see us do more is with regard to our ability to provide scholarships. A lot of you have met the fine folks that we have awarded scholarships to this year, but we need to be able to increase that fund. And so I want to just remind you that both individuals and organizations can contribute to the scholarship endowment fund for the Floyd Qualls and the other ACB scholarships, and some folks have already done that this week. If you want information about how to do that, it's not difficult at all, and you can see me or Lane Waters, and we'll help you out. But it is an area that I hope folks will give some consideration to. We are also working on a number of long-range corporate sponsorships that I hope we'll be able to announce to you at the mid-year meetings and at next year's convention. And I think I'm getting the hook. So I will shut up because I happen to know that you are going to really want to hear from the person who's next on the program. So thank you very much for your attention and for a wonderful convention.
Well, as I said, what would we do without her? Let's give her another hand. Next on our agenda is an attorney from Washington, D.C. area. His name is Jeffrey Levicki, and he is going to tell us where our accessible money is. Maybe we will finally find out.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Melanie, for asking me to come here and speak. We've been at this litigation now for over 5 years. We started in May of 2002. And I'm sure that many of you know that this case has had important ramifications in many different areas. Just as way of some background, I represent the American Council of the Blind in this case and two individual plaintiffs as well, Pat Sheehan and Otis Stevens. And I've worked with Melanie and Pat and Otis now for 5.5 years on this case, and I think they've been wonderful clients, and I want to say that it's been a pleasure working with them. Now, this is a very important case because there are, in the United States, the numbers are not exact, but over 1 million legally blind adults, that is for Social Security purposes. And because this case is currently in litigation, I have to be circumspect about the specifics of what I'm going to say, and I think, therefore, that I'm going to try to give you an overview of the case without getting into issues of litigation strategy or things of that nature, which would not be appropriate for me to discuss in a public forum. First, this issue has been pending for a very long time. In 1983, the Bureau of Engraving and Printing issued a report recommending that the Treasury develop a electronic currency reader for use by people with visual impairments. In 1995, the National Academy of Sciences conducted an extensive review of accessibility features in currency, and they came up with a number of recommendations to the Department of the Treasury to insert in currency various types of accessibility features. The American Council of the Blind adopted resolutions on this topic in 1972, 1977, 1978, 1980, 1992, and again in 2004. And so as you can see, this is an issue that's been ongoing for a very long time. And indeed, no less an authority than the United States House of Representatives in 1997 adopted a resolution. And parenthetically, I will note that this resolution was adopted with the support and indeed the drafting assistance of the National Federation of the Blind. And the resolution, quote, strongly encourages the Secretary of the Treasury and the Bureau of Engraving and Printing to incorporate cost-effective tactile features into the design changes, thereby including the blind and verbally impaired community, visually impaired community, in independent currency usage, end quote. You can see why I became interested in this case. Well, one of the reasons is I can't very often tell the difference myself between the money, and it's an area which I think is an area which is very important, because this case doesn't only involve people who are blind, it also involves millions and millions of Americans who have low vision. So it's a case which has just enormous ramifications for people from all walks of life and all socioeconomic groups. Now, unfortunately, the government's response to this litigation has not been, in my view, helpful. Their response is essentially, look, we make currency available to everyone. That's their response. They say, we make it available for everyone. We don't tell the blind they cannot use currency. Well, suffice to say, the judge didn't buy that argument. And, in fact, I recall during the oral argument in the case before Judge Robertson of the United States District Court for the District of Columbia, the government position, the position of the Department of Justice was essentially the anti-discrimination statutes, they don't require us to go out and spend money to make things or currency accessible, or for that matter, anything else accessible. That was their position, and I recall Judge Robertson's response during the to that point. He asked the government counsel, he said to him, counsel, look around you, look at this courtroom. The courtroom, by the way, in the Federal District Court in Washington, D.C., was recently rebuilt. He said, look around you, and what do you see in this courtroom? What you see are ramps. You see in the elevators, you see accessible signage. So the argument that the government isn't required to spend money to make things accessible, it just doesn't fly. And nor is it borne out, for that matter, by the precedent from the Supreme Court. Now, the government has also said that changing currency, changing the design of currency, would undermine its acceptance in foreign countries. Well, it's interesting because Judge Robertson didn't buy that argument either, obviously. And he said, and it just makes sense, the U.S. currency is about the strength of the economy. When people want dollars overseas, it's not because of the way the dollars are designed. It's because that reflects the underlying strength of the U.S. economy. Now, in fact, in actual point of fact, a tactile feature on U.S. currency would go a long way to reducing counterfeiting. Amen. Approximately 44% of domestically passed counterfeit notes are reproduced with color digital copying devices. And a tactile feature on currency could not be reproduced in such a manner. Moreover, other major currencies which would be desirable for targets for counterfeiters have adopted such features. The euro has foil strips on the currency. They have foil holograms on the currency. And these features serve two purposes. One, to deter counterfeiting, and two, to assist people with visual impairments in denomination. In this respect, I would note that the United States is virtually alone of all the major countries in not having currency, which in some way can be denominated by the blind. In fact, in the 1995 study conducted by the National Academy of Sciences, they conducted a detailed study of currency in over 120 countries. And in fact, they found that 24 countries adopted large denomination numerals for the benefit of the low vision community. 167 out of 171 had adopted a clearly differentiated color scheme, again for the benefit of the low vision community. And I want to make the point here that this case is also for the benefit of the low vision community as well. At the time of the 1995 study, there were 16 countries that used raised intaglio print, which has a tactile quality. And the vast majority of currencies were different sized for different denominations. Now, in 2002, the euro was introduced. The euro is obviously a major currency. It's important to know that the euro was developed, was designed with the contribution of various experts, including the European Blind Union. They participated from the ground floor in the design of the currency. And in fact, the euro has a number of tactile features which are identifiable to touch. Specifically, on the edges of the euro, there is a raised intaglio print, which helps people with visual impairments denominate banknotes. And there is also a foil feature. The foil feature has a glossy feel, which is distinguishable from the remaining surface of the banknote. And these features vary in shape and location by the denomination. Also, by the way, the euro increases approximately 6 to 7 millimeters for each denomination. Now, the Canadian currency is another currency which was redesigned once again in 2001, once again after consultation with blind organizations in Canada. And the Canadian currency, and I'm just curious, have many people here had experience with the Canadian currency? Well, then, as you know, the Canadian currency has a series of symbols which are essentially formed by groupings of six raised dots. These dots are embossed and back-coated to increase their durability. Now, in this litigation, we received an affidavit from the president of the company that makes Canadian banknotes. And here's what he said in his affidavit, and I'm going to quote. It's a brief quote. Based on our knowledge of the quality of U.S. banknote paper and the variables affecting TFB, TFB is the term used in Canada for the feature for the blind, performance, we believe it probable that we could develop a specific formulation for the U.S. banknote which would create a TFB feature that the visually impaired would find useful for denominating U.S. banknotes. End quote. Now, the government has talked about the cost involved in making the changes which we're seeking. And I'm going to give you what the costs are for three features which we proposed to the government. These are not the only features, but they're the three features which we proposed. To create an embossed feature such as is used in the Canadian currency, The initial capital cost, which essentially are cost in new machinery required to manufacture the embossed feature, the initial one-time capital outlay would be $45.5 million. The additional annual cost, which essentially is increased labor required to staff the new machinery, would be $15,264,000 per year. To manufacture U.S. banknotes with a foil feature, which would be perceptible to the touch, the initial capital cost would be $51.5 million, and the additional annual cost would be $15,330,000. To manufacture a banknote which has a small perforation feature, which would be perceptible to the touch, the initial capital cost would be $75 million, and the additional annual cost would be $8,324,000. Now, these costs reflect the cost to modify all banknotes, including the $1 bill. I would also like to say that with respect to the issue of the cost or the additional cost involved, the cost to produce low vision features such as a larger denomination numeral or strikingly different dominant colors on each banknote are significantly smaller. Now, with one of the issues that come up, and just to close that circle, just be clear, those costs are not significant when considering the resources available to the agency, to the United States Department of Treasury. Now, with respect to the issue of electronic currency readers, because this always comes up in any discussion of manufacturing banknotes which are accessible to the visually impaired. In 1983, the Bureau of Engraving and Printing conducted the study, and they urged the Department of Treasury to fund, essentially, research and to develop a prototype of a cheap or inexpensive portable unit. That study essentially conducted dust. And the 1995 study from the National Academy of Sciences made similar recommendations. Once again, no action was taken. Now, in 2004, after this lawsuit was commenced, the Bureau of Engraving and Printing issued a request for quotations to industry, seeking the development of a pocket-sized device with a target retail price of $35 or less. And they were prepared to fund the prototype up to a cost of $50,000. Now, there's a few problems with electronic currency readers from our position. One and foremost, the technology is already there to make them unnecessary. There is no reason why people who are blind should have to be conspicuous in using an electronic currency reader. When, in fact, accessibility features can be put on the banknote itself. And in any event, the government said that they would not subsidize the cost of the reader, which, by the way, currently are running at about $270 each. And significantly, when the Department of Justice ran their own test on these devices, on the newer series of currency, they found a 25% do-not-read rate, which is clearly unacceptable. So that is basically an overview. We are currently in the middle of litigation in this case. It's now at the Court of Appeals. I don't want to go into too much detail about what's happening at the Court of Appeals and our some of our, as I said, some of our litigation strategy. But I think suffice to say that we are very pleased with the outcome of the case at the district court. And we believe we won, and we won on the facts, and we won on the law. Thank you.
Well, speaking as one who has currency that's easily read, I find it crazy that you can't in the U.S.
Please get to a microphone if you have a question. Yes.
There we go. Mr. Lipke, Ray Campbell from the state of Illinois, and I have a two-part question. What do you think, how do you think our position is going to be affected, or is it going to be affected with, number one, the introduction of the legislation by Pete Stark from California about clipping off the corner of a bill, and number two, by the work of the activism of the National Federation of the Blind in saying we don't need accessible currency? How do you think those things would affect our position in this case?
Well, first of all, with respect to the current developments on Capitol Hill, I'm not involved in that aspect of the issue. You know, there are political issues and then there are legal issues, and I'm involved in the legal aspects of the case. So I'm not really going to comment with respect to what's happening on Capitol Hill.
Fair enough.
I'm sorry, the second part of your question again was...
The second part was the activism that right after the ruling came out and which has continued by the National Federation of the Blind to basically say, no, we don't need accessible currency as blind people, that we are perfectly capable of managing our own money without accessible currency, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I just go back to what was House Resolution number 122, which was an exhibit which we filed with the United States District Court. In which the National Federation of the Blind strongly encouraged the Secretary of the Treasury to incorporate cost-effective tactile features in banknotes. I can't explain it. I can explain it if there's a reversal in their position.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, or Mr. Speaker,
take one more question. Yes.
I am from California and in Pete Stark's district. I have been interviewed by that office and by newspapers, and they ask why the Federation opposes it. And so in Mr. Stark's office, they have asked, first they asked me, and I said, I've never understood what they do. But then they did ask, Mr. Stark's office did talk with them, and they talked about why it was that in 94 they had two resolutions supporting this kind of thing, and now they don't. And they said, well, one thing, it caused litigation, it caused appeals, and people to appeal against appeals. And so he asked this question, and I asked this question now to you, if you agree with it. He said, well, then, if we got this bill through with our bills that have corners that everybody could identify, he said, then the legal problem would go away, and then you wouldn't oppose it, have a reason to oppose it, would you? And they said they guessed not. So do you think, my question to you then is, supposing for some good fortune we could get a bill through that would give us legislation, would this then make us successful in your end of it, your legal aspect of it? Would the litigation then go away if this bill passed, or would it still go on?
Well, I don't want to comment on a hypothetical situation. I'm involved in the legal aspects of the case, I'd prefer to comment on what we know, what has happened, and what the current situation is, and I would prefer not to comment on a hypothetical situation.
Would you want or not want to have us recommend that the people in Congressman Stark's office talk to you? Would that be helpful or not helpful?
Our position all along is we're happy to talk with anyone.
Okay.
Could I please ask a question or comment?
Thank you. Do we have a question from an HGB radio listener?
No, it's Robert A. Jones.
No, we do not at this time, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, Mr. Lubicki. I would like to let you all go for a 15-minute break. And wait a minute. It's 20 after. Let's try to get back at 10:35. And when we do, let's have two very nice door prizes. Also, before you get away, exhibits will be closing at 1 p.m. So if you think of a last-minute thing you want to get, run in there quickly and purchase it. Thank you. Please be back promptly.
Well, there we go. Accessible currency.
Yes.
I just do not understand. Well, you know, I come from a country where we've had it. We've always had it. And I find it amazing that they're even quibbling about it.
Well, unfortunately, so do I.
You know, cost, yeah, that's okay. You know, I always say, well, these people that quibble about the cost, what would you do if you suddenly went blind? You'd be in all sorts of trouble. So, you know, and it's a thing that every other country's taken into account. Why, in somewhere like the US, of all places, are they saying, well, we got to think about it. We got to, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry. It really, really gets me, this sort of thing.
Well, and I guess I'm very disturbed that our colleagues and friends in the Federation take the position that they take. Of course we can manage our money. Of course we know folding or putting things away, putting bills in different pockets. Of course. That has nothing to do...
That's not the point, is
with
it?
...with the accessibility of the money.
That's absolutely...
When
it's a red herring.
When you're in a hurry and you're, you know... And we all get in that hurry. It happens to me. I'm sure it happens to you. You know, you stuff the bills in. You say, okay, well,
of
I'm
course.
Remember. I put the five there, the one there.
Yeah.
And then you don't.
Yeah, of course.
Why must we as blind people be superhuman and super organized? If that's the case, let's remove all of the printing from all of the currency.
I mean, the other thing is why we as blind people, in the eventuality that we've messed ourselves up and what have you, why do we have to ask people something is? I think that is so... It's humiliating to a certain degree.
Exactly.
And, you know, I mean, it's open to all sorts of abuse. You ask the wrong person, your money's gone or whatever. But I just think there shouldn't even be a debate about this.
Yeah,
it's absolutely crazy.
I completely agree.
Anyway, we could debate this.
Well, let me kind of do a quick update.
Yeah, sure. Then I've got a little thing to play.
And then you've got a little thing to play.
I have.
We considered a couple of resolutions this morning. One of them I thought was quite interesting. A resolution that would require ACB to work with appropriate entities to work toward lower gasoline prices. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
And it was defeated, and I think primarily because many of us, and I actually voted against that resolution, feel that if the gas prices do increase, people are going to stop using their vehicles and public transportation will become more of a must.
That's how they do it in the UK,
or trying
to do it.
Yeah.
But the other side of that is if you do that, you have to make very, very sure that you have good public transport. You probably can't leave it as is. You have got to improve it. The only way you'll get people to use public transport is to improve it.
Is to improve it. That's right. The next resolution that came up dealt with training materials from GW Micro. And the resolution was that ACB strongly urge GW Micro
to develop and produce accessible audio materials on cassette, CD, and in DAISY formats. And this resolution was also defeated. Some of the information in the resolution was correct. It said GW Micro has just released version 6.0, and that's 6.1 that they've released, that there was no audio tutorial on the software CD. There is. And then I know that GW Micro have contracted with a training specialist, who I can't say who it is, but when folks hear who it is, they will know the name, to produce these materials. And it is my understanding that the materials will be on cassette and CD. I don't know about DAISY.
Right.
So that resolution was defeated. We then had Melanie Brunson's report, and she really talked about a number of things. We have some new staff in the national office.
Yep.
We have new support staff. We have a new director. Oh, that feedback is...
Got it down here.
Yeah. We have a new director of advocacy, Eric Bridges, and some new support staff. So there may be some new voices when folks call the national office at 800-424-8666. And where's the rest of my notes?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
No,
they just disappeared.
Oh, this technology is wonderful when it works, folks.
It's glorious. Let me maximize my screen. There we go.
Okay.
She talked about her trip to Japan and how she used accessible currency in Japan. She talked about the coalition. Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. She talked about that there would be increased cooperation to support and promote more audio description. ACB is working to ensure that the set-top boxes that we will see in 2009 on February 17th, that will be federally subsidized for some folks to enable them to have high-def television. ACB is working to ensure that those federally subsidized boxes are accessible and that the spec is contained in the bid to build those boxes. There are four channels that will come through digitally on each one of your high-def television channels, and ACB is working to make the networks aware of the need to pipeline audio description through one of those four channels. There is a coalition on accessible telecommunications that Melanie is urging all ACB affiliates to join, and she will be providing more information on that coalition at the end of convention. So if you're on the leadership list, look there, look in the forum, look on the ACB list, etc. She also talked about how they're working with accessible emergency warnings on TV, so that you know what the beep is for, not just that we got a problem, but what the problem is. And that the ACB have been working to ensure that FEMA have a disability services coordinator. Phil Strong is working on training traffic engineers with respect to accessible pedestrian signals, as well as working on the hybrid car issue, the old quiet car issue.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
And then, of course, we concluded with Jeffrey Levitke, who is ACB's attorney in the accessible currency case.
Okay.
That's a wrap-up of this morning. I'll turn it over to you, Christina.
That's very good. Okay, I've got a little thing here. Some of you know about Bookshare, and we got a little interview to play for you when I can find it. Here we are. So let's go straight to that, and I'll try and get in as much as we can. It's not too long, but you know, the break isn't that long, so let's go with it.
Hi, this is Rachel Bader with ACB Radio Interactive. I'm kind of roaming around the exhibit hall, and I'm standing in front of the Bookshare booth talking to John Glass with Bookshare. So, hi, John. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing just fine, Rachel. How are you enjoying the convention so far?
I'm really having a good time, having a great time walking through the exhibits and bringing everything to the listeners of ACB Radio. So I thought I would bring ACB Radio to you rather than have you come to the booth. So I'm kind of walking around.
Thank you very
much. So what's happening with Bookshare these days?
Well, we have a lot of things going on at Bookshare. First of all, we, is obvious, we're here in the exhibit area. We're booth number 69. And we are giving away a complimentary subscription for each day of the convention. So for anyone who is here at the convention listening to this, I invite you to come by and visit our booth. But we have a lot of things going on at Bookshare. We have had several website upgrades this year that have added some new capabilities to our site. One of the big ones that a lot of people have requested is to have the ability to search for public domain books. And you can now do that on Bookshare. Of course, public domain books are free for everyone to download without having a subscription. Here at the show, we are offering a special where we have waived the $25 sign-up fee. So anybody who wants to sign up for Bookshare that's here at the show, and actually we're going to be offering this for convention attendees through the end of July, the cost to subscribe to Bookshare is $50, and that includes your first year of access to everything in the library. You get unlimited access to all of the books and periodicals that we have. We've been adding to the New York Times top 10 bestsellers. Many of you know that for the last couple of years we have been putting these books into the Bookshare collection each month in both the fiction and nonfiction categories. And we have just finished a complete redesign on the New York Times webpage. So when you go to this webpage, you'll find that it now has headings and tables, and it's real easy to navigate. So I hope that people will go to www.bookshare.org and check out the New York Times webpage. And we just had another person walk up to the booth. So go ahead.
Oops. We have dogs saying hello here. All right. Yeah, well, that's great. Now, Bookshare is just the neatest concept in that it really is what it says. It's people sharing books that they've gotten and scanned into the computer. If somebody is interested in not only receiving books, but maybe contributing books, what is the process for that? And
if you go to our website, which is www.bookshare.org, we have a link on our main page, which is labeled Submitting Your Favorite Books. And if you click on that link, it tells you all about the process. Basically, as you just said, Rachel, people can scan books, submit them to us, they go into a validation queue, and they're reviewed by another volunteer. And then once that process is complete, the books go into our approval queue, they're reviewed by an administrator in our offices, and then they get added into the collection. We currently have about 33,000 books in the Bookshare library, and we're adding about 100 books a week.
Wow, 100 books a week, gee.
Uh-huh.
That's great, that's great. And I know that for some of our listeners in other countries who always say, we want Bookshare, is there any anything in the works there to get something like this available in other countries?
Yes, there is. We're working very actively to increase the number of books that are available to our international subscribers. It is possible for people outside of the United States currently to subscribe to Bookshare. And in addition to having access to our public domain books, you will have access to all books that we have worldwide permissions for. Currently, those include the O'Reilly Media technical books, which we have about 600 of in the collection. And there are a few other books that are available for international subscribers. But this is an area that we're really working on very actively this year. We're trying to get international permissions from many more authors and publishers so that we can offer a much wider variety to our international subscribers.
That's great. Now, is it difficult to get that permission from authors? What is your, you know, it seems like it's been pretty successful so far with the number of books that you have, but I would imagine that you kind of have to explain that to your publishers and your authors to get those permissions in
well,
order
we,
to do that.
We do, and, you know, that's not an area that I've really been much involved with, so I can't really tell you how it's been going, other than to say that we have had some real good successes recently, and we have a number of people at Bookshare who are working on this project, so we hope to continue to increase the number of books that are available to our international subscribers in leaps and bounds. We really are hoping that we're going to have a lot more books available by the end of this year.
That's great. Well, we appreciate being able to stop by and talk with you and share Bookshare with ACB Radio audience. And if anybody is interested in checking out Bookshare further, go ahead and give them the contact information again.
I have a phone number.
Okay. Our website is www.bookshare.org. And if people would like to have ask specific questions, please feel free to contact us by sending an email to info@bookshare.org.
All right. John Glass, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Our reporter there was Rachel Bader. This is ACB Radio Mainstream, where your listening is our business. Yeah, the next part of the convention will start very soon. It's about 10:30 central by me, but my watch may be a little bit inaccurate. I'm not sure. Anyway, I hope you're enjoying the coverage, and don't forget that we are covering the Candidates Forum. I believe it starts about 0 hours UTC, and we'll probably run for a couple of hours. Okay? We've been asked and called to order, so we're going to be back underway in about a minute or so.
Yeah, and now we'll get to hear all the door prizes.
Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
Here we go. There's Michael
Melvin.
This is
door prize guy.
Oh, great.
Yes, and our first door prize is from the state of Washington.
This is Michael with the door prizes. We're going to start with a $25 door prize from the Badger Association. Steve Barris, Alexander, Virginia. Steve, are you here? Samantha Hubbard, Louisville, Kentucky. Robert Spangler, Vincent, Iowa. Is Robert here?
He was here.
All right. And we have from the WCB, the Washington Council, it's $50. Marge Bancroft from San Francisco, are you here? Tobias Bergender from Pennsylvania, are you here?
Sounds like she's here. Okay.
Madam Secretary.
Let's get back to work here.
Shelford from Honolulu. All right.
Madam Secretary.
Is he here? Guys, I can't hear what's going on. Is Shelford here from... All right. That concludes the door prizes for now.
Thank you very much.
Madam Secretary.
Madam Secretary.
Yes.
I rise a point of personal privilege. This is Bob Hache from Massachusetts.
Yes.
I won a ticket for the dinner theater, the Guthrie Theater, on Saturday evening, and unfortunately will not be able to use it. I have left the ticket at the information desk. For anyone that wants it, it will be free. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam
now, don't
Secretary.
Everybody rush out at once.
This is Ron Melliman.
Okay. Our speaker that we're going to hear from now is from... private rehabilitation services, and her name is Kate Gaethwall. Kate Grathwall. I'm sorry. I apologize. I did not pronounce her name correctly. Would you please give your attention to Kate, and we'll go on with the program. Thank you.
Thank you very much. As Donna said, my name is Kate Grathwall, and I've been asked to come and talk to you today about a private rehabilitation center here in the Minneapolis area. Vision Loss Resources is the organization that I represent. Vision Loss Resources has a very long history. We are a merger between the St. Paul Society for the Blind and the Minneapolis Society for the Blind. And the Minneapolis Society for the Blind started in 1917 and the St. Paul Society for the Blind in the early 20s. In the mid-90s, Vision Loss Resources merged the two offices so that we could more effectively serve the people in the then 9-county metro area, and now we serve 11 counties surrounding the Minneapolis and St. Paul Twin City area. What's really exciting today to talk to you about is not only are we a nonprofit organization, but we are funded in a very unique manner. We have our own private enterprises. They're market rate, and so they do light manufacturing, packaging for 3M, Target, various large corporations around the area. So they produce income, profit, that funds the nonprofit part of the organization that I work in. We have two major divisions of service we provide in the Twin Cities. One is your rehabilitation center. So we serve people from all over the state and the 5-state area when needed. And we provide all the things that a rehab center should provide: orientation, mobility, Braille, activities of daily living. How do you find your way into a Cub supermarket, which is the big one in this part of the country? How do you find the produce or the canned soup section? So everything from soup to nuts, if you will, we cover. Technology. How do you use technology in Braille? How do you use technology at work? How do you use technology in your home? What's the right device for you? We work very closely with our state services for the blind. Other states call it your commission for the blind. So the clients that come into our rehab center are predominantly clients who are on a state funding. And they are there either for a full-time program, which could be 6 to 8 months. They could have a part-time program, or they could come in for a special component. Perhaps they just need some Braille or technology. They were a computer programmer, and now they need to be able to do it with accessible software. So depending on what's the need, the state and the client work together with our staff and our rehab center to create the program that works best for them. Our rehab center is self-sufficient in that they fund themselves through state funding, and they cover their costs for staff and equipment. The other area that I'd like to talk to you about is our community services program. The community services program grew out of the St. Paul Society for the Blind. Minneapolis Society for the Blind was the regional rehab center. So St. Paul Society for the Blind decided, well, we'll not reinvent the wheel, nor will we be in competition with the Minneapolis Society for the Blind, but we'll serve another need. And out of that grew the community services program. The community services program is funded by our own enterprises that make that profit, and then the United Way. The purpose of the community services program is to serve those people who perhaps don't meet the criteria to be state funded. They're 65. They're their vocation isn't to go back to work, but they need help being independent in their lives, in their home, in their banking, and taking care of all of their personal needs. So the community services program was created to fill that niche. What we do today is exactly that. We will go out into the home. We get referrals either from family and friends, neighbors, doctors, state services for the blind will send us people. Pretty much all you have to do is call us up, find us on the internet, call us in the phone book, and we'll come out and see you. And what we do is we assess, what are your needs? What are you having trouble with? The fastest growing population of visually impaired people, as you know, is the older adult with macular degeneration. So that's a large part of what we see, as well as diabetic retinopathy, glaucoma, and various other congenital causes for blindness. And what we do is we find out, what do they need? If they're not driving anymore, can we connect them with the local transport systems? Can we help them learn how to use Metro Mobility or DARTS or the Anoka Traveler? And for those of you who are out of town, these don't mean anything, but they're the transport systems in our area. Do they need to have a reader or a shopper? Can we connect them with some of our volunteers who will come out and do that for them? Do they just need a little bit of technology? Can we increase their knowledge of technology? Are they computer users? Can we turn them on to JAWS or Magic or Zoom Text? We have volunteers in our community services program who will teach people, older adults, who've always used their computer for doing Quicken and their banking, and now they want to do online banking. We'll teach them which software will work for them, how they can connect it and get set up at home. We'll also teach them adaptive techniques to be able to stay independent in their home. We run a 5-week life skills class. It's one day a week, 9 to 1:30, and what we do is we run through everything from check writing to threading a needle to what is a white cane and why should I use it? Do I need it? Am I blind enough? That's what a lot of our older adults ask. Am I blind enough to use the cane? How do I use it? When is it helpful? So we'll teach them that. We'll teach them orientation mobility, safe cutting skills. Every day they all, and it's usually a group of 6 or 8, they'll cook their luncheon meal. And so it'll be, you know, a main course, an entree, a salad, a dessert. They do beer bread, which is a big hit. They teach them simple microwave, how you have guests who show up. How do you make a really knock-down, delicious cherry cobbler in 10 minutes in the microwave while the coffee's brewing? So our life skills class is geared towards helping people just live, continue to live their life, help people adjust to blindness. And again, most of the people who come to this program are seniors. They've lost their vision, and they just want to get back to their life. We help them do that. The other thing is we have a hearing component. With this elderly population, often we find that there's hearing loss. When your vision is poor, it's hard to find out if your ear is full of wax or is your hearing aid full of wax, or did you break something? So we have a hearing specialist who will also go out to the home and help people walk through that kind of process. What do I need? Should I be seeing an audiologist? Is it time to replace my hearing aid? They will help advocate for them so that if they get caught up in some of the sales with hearing aids, they have someone who can help walk them through that so that they can have some advocacy support for that. The other amazing thing that this community services program does is we have 42 different support groups throughout the Twin Cities. So not only do we have about 5 different support groups at our facility in Minneapolis, we have that many as well in St. Paul, and then we have them throughout the surrounding community. If you have a little bit of awareness, we are surrounded by a beltway we call the 694-494 loop, and it covers a great number of our suburbs. And from one corner to the other corner, it's kind of like that oval TV tube shape. from one corner to the other is more than 60 miles. So we have 42 support groups inside and just outside that loop. So we're covering a pretty broad area. If you can't get to a support group, if you are homebound, you're 85 and you don't want to get on a metro transit system and traverse to another town, we have what we call peer counselors. And these are people who have been trained in peer counseling. So they have a good 8 weeks of training on what to do on the other end of the phone line. They will call you up once a month, every 2 weeks, once a week. You and the peer counselor determine your schedule. And they're the person on the other end of the line that you can ask all your questions to. Or just say, you know, I didn't expect to be blind at 85. I had all these other things I was going to do. Who's going to drive to Bridge now? I always used to take the gang to Bridge. So the peer counselor is there to help them figure out other strategies, talk to them about other services that are available. So the volunteer corps that we have is over 3,000 when you consider the volunteers, sighted volunteers who go out and do reading for people, help with bills, checking, that sort of thing. And then the peer counselors who actually are in phone contact and do make home visits with our Metro Transit system. The other area that we have that is pretty interesting and pretty unique for a rehab facility is we have a community center. Our community center started 6 years ago with one event and four people. And 6 years later, we have over 30 events a month, and we serve 3,000 people a year. And these are people who are either going out to an audio-described play at the Guthrie, or the Chanhassen Dinner Theater, or the Old Log Theater, or they go down to the Metrodome and they watch the Saints, or the Saints are out in St. Paul, but the Minnesota Twins, or they go to the State Fair, or they go bowling, or they go to audio-described movies at various cities around the metropolitan area. These are blind and visually impaired people who get together to have a life. So if you want to go somewhere and do something, go to a museum. If you want to get together and go to a concert, you call us and we'll help organize it. So we have people coming all the time to our facility for certain events, whether it's tea and reading Emily Dickinson's poems, the Mystery Club book club, the nonfiction book club, or Cribbage Bingo 500, or a very competitive basket weaving series. Some of these classes, there's a waiting list. So it sounds silly to think that there'd be a waiting list for a basket weaving course, but then you haven't met Frank. And Frank has a waiting list for any class he has going. So this is just one way that we've found to build community, help people connect with people, go out and have a life, be adventurous. All the activities that we do come from the community. They're the ones who suggested, well, why don't we go here? And why haven't we done this? And then we contact our staff person, Stacy, and she makes it happen. So this is just one way to make a rehab center come to life. Your regular rehab, and then a community that goes out and serves the community, and then a community that gives back. A lot of our previous rehab clients, a lot of our clients through the community services come back into the community through community service classes that they decide they want to teach. There are volunteers who teach people how to use Zoom Text or Magic, the other technology. They come back into the community center and they put on classes. The Blind Quilting Club was started by some people who decided, well, just because I'm blind doesn't mean I should give up the greatest love I have. And so that's what we do here at Vision Loss Resources in the Twin Cities. Can I answer any questions?
I have a comment.
I need a mic.
Ken Rogers. I have a question.
Ken Rogers calling for.
Glenn McCulley.
Okay, this is Ken Rogers. I, as a graduate of vision loss resource myself, that's the place that I took my adjustment to blindness training many years ago. I am particularly proud of vision loss resources, and something Kate is a little too polite to tell you, but this is our city's response or our alternative to the Federation's Rehabilitation Center that's here in our city.
Madam Chair?
But I also wanted to let you know that because of their extensive volunteer service, many, many of the volunteers that have been helping you at the hotel here this week have been from Vision Loss Resources. So I want to thank you. Thank you, Kate.
Madam Chair?
Thanks, Ken.
Madam Chair? Madam Chair? Donna?
Do we have one more question?
Yeah, I've got one. This is Glenn McCulley from...
All right, go ahead.
This is Glenn McCulley from Seattle. And the other day I took the tour of the center, and they do some wonderful things over it, looks like. One question that I asked the other day, and I'd like a little more clarification on, I asked about the fact, about how many blind people worked in their industry, their light industrial factory that they are doing. It's very light manufacturing. And I was told that they were all cited because it was market rate jobs. And I'd like a little explanation about what that is, because I work in Seattle for an NIB affiliate doing human resources, and we have people that are making upwards of $20 an hour working on computerized milling machines, doing aircraft parts, making heavy stuff for the military. And I'm wondering why a blind person wouldn't be able to work in your shop, per se, with the 70% unemployment rate of blind people. I think it's...
Sure, excellent question. We do actually have about five totally blind people on the line. We've had several passings, so we are down from, I think we had, at the beginning of this year, we lost several long-term employees. We had 11, but I think we're down to five now. There's no reason a blind person can't work on the line, and they do. We just haven't had a lot of new hires wishing to enter the enterprises. But we do have blind people on the line.
Madam Chair?
Madam Chair? I'm sorry, we do need to move on. Thank you, Kate, for
Thank
your
you.
Information.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will turn now to our business of the day. However, before I turn the microphone back over to President Gray, I have another little story to tell you. The trainer hired a new jockey, and the jockey came to ride the horse the first day, and the trainer said to him, "Now, when you get to a hurdle, just yell, 'Ellie-oop!'" And the jockey thought, "Yeah, right." So he got on the horse, and in the first hurdle, the horse crashed through. The second hurdle, the horse crashed through. And the third one, he whispered, "Alley-oop." Nothing. Crashed through that one, too. So I thought, well, let me try it. So they got to the fourth hurdle, and he yelled, "Alley-oop!" And the horse went over it. So all the rest of the way around the track, he yelled each time they reached a hurdle. And the horse won the race. And the trainer came over and he said, "Boy, you had me worried for a while." And the jockey said, "Is this horse deaf?" And the trainer said, "Deaf? No, he's blind." So that goes to show us that when we have a hurdle in front of us, let's jump over it and get on with life and have a great life. I would like to thank you for your indulgence this morning. This is my last opportunity as Secretary of the American Council of the Blind to be at the podium, and I really appreciate every one of you, and I am proud to have been on the board of directors of this wonderful organization. And now I'd like to leave you with a one final farewell as secretary.
Thank you, Donna. We're not done with you yet. Okay. Let's move now back. It's time again for business, and we have quite a lot of business to take care of between now and 5 p.m. tomorrow. Please be aware, as with last year, we will adjourn the convention at 5 p.m., and we will not meet. And we will not meet on Saturday. I know we can do this. We've done it a number of years. I think back to my first ACB convention when we ran over time by, 8-10 hours. We were meeting at 9:30 on Saturday night. We're not going to do that this time, right? I will now recognize for the next resolution the chair of our committee, Judy Jackson.
Hello again. This is resolution 0715, MaxiAIDS. Whereas the American Council of the Blind, ACB resolution 9930, says in its resolve clause, that this organization authorize and urge its officers, board, exhibit coordinator, and convention committee to decline the request to participate in ACB convention exhibits by any exhibitor, seller, and or promotional entity who requests to be a part of the ACB convention, but who is documented to have engaged in unfair, dishonest, or documented disreputable business practices, and whereas MaxiAIDS Incorporated has been successfully sued over the course of nearly a decade for a variety of unfair and deceptive business practices by Independent Living AIDS in several lawsuits and by the Perkins School for the Blind, and whereas these suits resulted in several jury verdicts, contempt of court orders, and settlements resulting in multi-million dollar damage awards and court orders, injunctions, clearly documenting that MaxiAIDS has engaged in a variety of dishonest, disreputable, and unfair business practices. And whereas evidence of further wrongdoing resulting from some of these cases has caused in the past the Veterans Administration and the Rehabilitation Services Administration to investigate, limit, sanction, and even debar for a period of time MaxiAIDS from doing business with these agencies. And whereas the Board of Directors of ACB has at least twice in recent years assembled ad hoc committees to fully investigate these activities of MaxiAIDS and has twice assembled a body of evidence and other documentation of chronic wrongdoings by MaxiAIDS resulting in votes on two occasions to bar MaxiAIDS from exhibiting at our convention, invoking the clear intent of Resolution 9930. And whereas in an extraordinary ACB board meeting on November 22, 2005, a narrow majority of the ACB board inexplicably reversed the decision to bar MaxiAIDS from participating in the ACB convention in spite of the huge body of evidence assembled by this very body, by this very board, and whereas this reversal in policy has damaged the credibility of ACB as a whole, defied the authority of convention assembled to impose policies through resolutions on the board, and thus has violated the ACB Constitution. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the American Council of the Blind in convention assembled this fifth day of July 2007 at the Hyatt Regency Hotel in the city of Minneapolis, Minnesota, that this organization expressly and unambiguously prohibit MaxiAids Incorporated, its officers or agents, from exhibiting, sponsoring, advertising, or otherwise engaging in the conventions of the American Council of the Blind for the next 3 years, and be it further resolved that the ACB Board of Directors, officers, and staff are expressly prohibited from making any purchase of any product or service on behalf of the American Council of the Blind from MaxiAids, its officers or agents, for a period of 3 years.
Mr. President.
Mr. President, David Trott.
Mr. President, a parliamentary point.
I recognize Michael Byington for a parliamentary point.
Mr. President, because the American Council of the Blind is involved in some pending litigation relating to the subject of this resolution, and our attorneys have advised us that it should not be discussed while the litigation is pending, I object to the consideration of the question.
Mr. Chair?
Very well. Very well.
Mr. President, David.
Mr. Chair.
No one will be recognized immediately. The consideration of the question is objected to. This type of question is non-debatable. That means we will move immediately to a vote.
Mr. Chair?
You are not recognized. The question has been objected to, and this is not a debatable issue. So, the question, shall the question be considered? Shall the question be considered? Those in favor of considering the question signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed to considering the question signify by saying no.
No.
Those opposed have been successful. The question will not be considered. Judy,
Mr.
the next
Chairman.
Resolution, please. You're not recognized. The next resolution, please.
Right. Mr. Chairman.
One moment.
Mr.
I'm
Chairman.
Pulling up.
I'd like to make a motion.
Okay.
I'd like to move the American Council of the Blind waive the reading of the boilerplate for the remainder of the resolutions.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to waive the reading of the boilerplate for the remaining resolutions. Mike Godino made the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion carries. Madam Chairman,
yes, I'm ready.
You're authorized not to read the boilerplate. Thank heavens.
Yay.
All right. Next resolution, please.
Okay. This is Resolution 0702, Destination Elevators. Whereas the American Council of the Blind advocates for complete accessibility of the built environment for people who are blind or visually impaired and deafblind, and whereas a new type of elevator known as a destination elevator is designed in a way that the destinations of several elevators may be controlled by one or more control panels located outside of the elevators, and whereas such elevators may move vertically or horizontally to locations that cannot be selected from within the elevator, and whereas destination elevators are currently being installed in buildings in many cities, and whereas manufacturers of destination elevators have not made these elevators accessible to people who are blind, visually impaired, and deafblind. And now, therefore, be it resolved that this organization support the use of destination elevators when and only when the information provided by the elevator control panel is understandable and available via tactile, audible, and visual means, and be it further resolved that full accessibility in the case of these elevators means tactile information in the form of a refreshable Braille display at each elevator control panel, and be it further resolved that in addition to the Braille display at the control panel, tactile information identifying the elevator car must also be provided, parentheses, this can be accomplished by the use of an additional placard on the elevator door jamb, close parentheses, and be it further resolved that in keeping with universal design, there should also be consistency in the placement of the elevator control panels in all elevator banks. The committee recommends a do pass.
Mr. Chairman?
It's been moved and seconded. Who seeks the floor?
Robert Miller from Florida.
Yes, Robert.
I would like to ask the maker or the committee to explain to me how a Braille display is going to accomplish anything, considering that you have to have a screen reader and a computer to control the Braille display. And I think we're asking for a technical advancement that we know nothing about.
Mr. Chairman,
what good is the Braille display going to do?
Mr. Chairman, Mike Godino.
Mike Godino, you're recognized.
The maker of the motion, the American Council of the Blind of New York. A destination elevator supplies visual information to the person who selects the floor they choose to go to in a way that it reads out the number of the elevator car that will be arriving to take them to their destination. A destination elevator is one that when you enter the elevator, the bank of elevators, there is a telephone keypad for which you enter the floor you wish to go to, and the visual display says car B. You go stand outside of car B, and when car B arrives, it's going to your floor. When you get on the elevator, there aren't any buttons. So there is visual information being provided that can be simply provided via a tactile refreshable Braille display in maybe 5 or 6 cells that will provide the same information, and the tactile placard outside the car will allow you to identify the car. So if you press the button and put your fingers on the refreshable display, it will say car B. You walk over, you feel inside the door jamb for the placard for car B. That's your elevator.
Thank you, Mike, for the clarification.
Mr. President?
I hear the lady who seeks the floor.
Somebody just came and told me this microphone doesn't work, but I think it does.
You're on fine, yeah.
Okay, I have a point of information. I missed last year's convention, and I would like to ask you or the chair, do we no longer say who introduces these resolutions?
I apologize. I meant to tell you that it was New York, and I had that written, and it was an oversight on the chair's part.
Well, Judy, it's not critical to the criticism for me to ask this, but I'm telling you something. With these resolutions, the way they're going, somebody's going to have to explain it to me, and I want to know where it's coming from.
Well, this is New York.
Mr. President, Paul Edwards.
Yes, Paul.
I have, I guess, two questions about this resolution. The first of them concerns why the committee chose to make no reference to the ADA, which has clear regulations governing elevators, and whether destination elevators are construed by their manufacturers to be covered by the ADA. It seems to me that we can make a strong argument that they ought to be, and therefore it seems to me that it's important to include them. But more important, if we're going to do that, then it would seem to me that our best step would be to address this resolution directly to the Access Board and ask them to immediately begin work to develop and implement such regulations as they deem appropriate for the implementation of accessibility to this new kind of elevator. And it seems to me that rather than spending a lot of time arguing on the specifics of what would be required, we would do better to direct this resolution to the Access Board and ask them to work on this issue.
Patricia Beatty.
Pat, I recognize you.
As chairman of the Environmental Access Committee, I'd like to go a little further even than Paul's suggestion, and that is to add not only the Access Board, which when it revised the ADAG several years ago, the second version of ADAG, the ADA Accessibility Guidelines, there was not quite this much advancement in the technologies concerning destination elevators. Destination elevators are, however, mentioned and covered, and so then the issue was going to be equivalent facilitation. But what I'd like to suggest is that in addition to the Access Board, which covers publicly funded buildings or public buildings, government buildings, or things that receive government funding, the ANSI standards, American National Standards Institute, is in a current cycle now of revising its standards for private sector public buildings and facilities. And I will say that I am now currently, as is Phil Strong as my alternate, sitting on that, and destination elevators are covered, and we will look and see and what is being recommended and be sure that it covers this new technology. But in any event, it would be covered under equivalent facilitation for required access, and we will follow up.
Okay, Pat, let me ask you something while you're at the microphone.
Yes.
And Paul, you may want to respond also. Is it responsive to the points made for us to add a resolve that would just say, and be it further resolved, that this resolution be sent to the Access Board, ATBCB, and ANSI Standards Committee by the ACB?
I would support that.
Okay. Judy, are you good with that?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I guess...
Paul, I recognize that doesn't speak to part of your issue, which is the issue about actually suggesting a solution. But we cannot stand here and rewrite this resolution this morning.
Well, but we still have, Mr. President, have tomorrow, and what would be in order would be a motion to refer to the committee, asking that they bring this resolution back in considerably shortened form as simply a directive resolution to the Access Board.
Well, we could do that, but what I'm asking you is it wrong for us to suggest a solution? They don't have to take it. But
well,
our New York affiliate has done a lot of work about this solution and so forth. What's the harm in just giving them a potential solution and allowing us to move on?
These elevators all being installed.
Mr. President?
Well, my concern is for ACB to appear to tie itself to a particular approach to the solution of the problem that may or may not prove to be the most appropriate.
All right, thank you. Who else called for the floor?
This is Pratik from New York.
Pratik, yes. You're recognized.
Thank you. And I'd like to speak to Paul's point a little bit. This resolution attempts to make certain points regarding the type of accessibility required and the type of difficulties that blind, partially sighted, as well as deafblind individuals may encounter when using these particular destination elevators. And the solutions that are suggested within this resolution are the types of solutions that can provide equal access to all these elevators. And at this point in the development of technology, and I'll also address the point that the gentleman from Florida requested regarding the particular technology. Braille displays can be controlled without having access to a computer if they're designed correctly. So at this point, I think it's absolutely appropriate for this body to acknowledge the fact that these elevators need to be accessible in a particular way and request that of the access board.
A point of information.
Mr. President.
Thank you very much. There's a lady with a point of information.
I'm sorry. I meant clarification. Sorry.
All right.
This is Marlena. If this was said, I missed it, and I apologize. Is there also included audio feedback? Because we have an aging population that doesn't all read Braille. So is that there?
I can answer that.
Yes.
Great.
Mike,
in some cases, there is one manufacturer of these destination elevators that puts a specific button that has a little blue wheelchair on it, that if you press that button, it will give you the information audibly. However, it tells you to go to car C, yet you still don't know where car C is.
Okay, but we are talking about, as well as Braille, we are also urging audio and Braille feedback, right?
Yes, format.
Okay.
And
multi-mode
print.
This is Gary Patterson.
Mr. President.
Okay.
Gary Patterson.
We've got a lot of calls for the floor right now. Let me just get this straight. We have Gary Patterson calling for the floor. We have a lady. Is that Carla?
It's the chair.
Oh, the chair.
Oh.
Well, and another gentleman. Was it Bob?
Bob Hache from Massachusetts. Yeah.
All right. So I'll recognize Gary and then Bob, and then we'll see where we're at.
I need it.
Would it be in order to offer what appears anyway would be like a friendly amendment to add a clause to the resolve to send this to the access board?
Yes,
that's what Chris has suggested.
I proposed it. And it's a good question. Thank you for raising it. I made that proposal. Pat Beattie accepted it. Unless there's objection, I believe we can accept that by general consensus.
Point of clarification from Pat Beattie.
Yes, Pat.
It was the Access Board and the ANSI Standards Committee.
That's correct.
Committee.
Okay. The Access Board and the ANSI Standards Committee.
Okay. I want to speak in favor.
I believe we've adopted that by general consensus. Bob?
I'd like to speak in favor of your suggestion along with Pat's. And I am concerned that if we were to take Paul's approach here, that we would delay implementation of action on this item. I think that we should add the resolve clause, get this done, and get moving on this process.
Mr. President.
Yes, I'll recognize the chair.
I just wanted to address Marlena's point about, did we talk about the audible? In the first resolve, it talks about that this organization support the use of destination elevators when and only when the information provided by the elevator control panel is understandable and available via tactile, audible, and visual means.
All right, very good. Thank you. Are we prepared to vote? I hear no more calls for the floor. All in favor of the resolution say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The resolution is adopted.
Mr. President, point of clarification. Since this resolution is now adopted, it is then just our responsibility to add the resolve and we're fine?
That's
or do
correct.
I have to bring it back?
No. You just need to add the final resolve as discussed on the floor.
Okay.
And make sure that staff has it.
Okay. Thank you for that. Okay. So are we ready then for another one?
Go ahead.
Okay, one moment. Okay. This next resolution, while I'm pulling it up, this was a resolution that Jim Urach, I think I'm saying his name correctly, out of Nebraska, sent to the leadership list. And in fact, what it was is it was an example of something that one of their students wrote, a teenager at about the age of 17. who wrote a resolution on accessible currency. And what this young lady was doing was she was giving some ideas about how she thought currency should be made accessible. And while we are not going to discuss how we think currency should be made accessible, we wrote in our committee a resolution. This is from the resolutions committee. We wrote a resolution as a takeoff from that, commending this young lady for what she did. She's a low vision young lady who lives in the state of Nebraska. And I just thought that it was a really neat thing that we've got somebody so young that already has a handle on resolutions and what advocacy is really all about. So here's the resolution. Whereas, 0706. Whereas Chelsea Ross, a low vision student from Bellevue, Nebraska, at the age of 17, wrote a resolution for the Nebraska Federal Student Congress championing the cause of accessible currency. And whereas Ms. Ross initially wrote the resolution for the purposes of her debate class, but ultimately worked to convince her fellow students of the necessity for accessible currency. And whereas Ms. Ross's actions are not typical of one so young, and whereas Ms. Ross demonstrated her commitment in equality for people who are blind or visually impaired, now, therefore, be it resolved that this organization commend the outstanding effort put forth by this exceptional young lady, and be it further resolved that a suitably prepared copy of this resolution be sent to Ms. Ross. This committee recommends a due pass.
Mr. President.
Very good. You've heard the recommendation. It has been duly seconded. And I recognize Michael Byington.
Thank you. Yes, Michael Byington. And Judy, it's easy to possibly do some redos when reading these resolutions. I certainly know that. In the last whereas clause, before you go into your resolves, you have the term commitment in equality, and I believe the intent of the committee was to say commitment to equality.
I
want to make sure that we have that correct in the
text. It is corrected now.
Thank you.
Very good. Any more debate? Any more discussion? Here. Okay. We'll wait for you to find a mic. Is that Penny Reeder?
All right, thanks a lot. Hi, I just have a question, Judy. This is Penny.
Uh-huh.
When you speak of Ms. Ross, is it M.S. Ross or M.I.S.S.?
We wrote it as M.S.
Thank you. That's what I was hoping you had done.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Chairman?
Well, if we all understand the substance of the...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, who seeks the floor?
Don Horn?
Yes, Don, you're recognized.
I definitely support the intent of this resolution, but I'm just wondering if we can maybe, and I don't know how it would read, if we can get rid of that clause which says that the actions taken by Ms. Ross are not typical of young people. I understand what the idea is, but if I were a young person, that might really bother me.
Don, let me help you a little bit here. Are you moving to strike that clause?
I'm moving to strike that clause. I'm just hoping that by doing that it'll still make sense. But yes, I'm moving to strike that clause.
Okay, now, Judy is chair. Are you prepared to do that, and we can accept the idea by general consensus?
Sure. I'm at the clause as we speak.
Okay. Unless I hear an immediate call for the floor, we'll accept this striking by general consensus and move on with the main motion. Is there further discussion or inquiry on the main motion? What is the point of order?
That's not a point of order. There's no change in the resolve clauses. There is at least part of one or one entire whereas clause removed, but the intention and the statement of the intention is still the same as before. Are we prepared to vote?
Yes.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion is adopted. You can see from what's happening here this morning that the work of the Resolutions Committee is not really done at the end of their report. They'll have lots of little cleanup things to do in the weeks to come, as is certainly true with our Constitution and Bylaws Committee. Judy, you got another one?
Yes, sir. I'm pulling it up. I was just taking out that. All right.
There we go.
This is Resolution 0710, and it's brought to me by ACB of Maryland on pedestrian safety. Whereas the American Council of the Blind has a long history of leading the nation in pedestrian safety issues, including the publication of two editions of the Pedestrian Safety Handbook, parentheses, most recently in April 2000, close parentheses. And whereas the safety and protection of all pedestrians is of paramount importance. And the microphone needs to go out. And whereas much new data adaptive and inaccessible technology rules, regulations, and guidelines have been developed and or implemented since 2000. And whereas traffic patterns and intersection design seem to be ever-changing, ever-changing and evolving, and whereas new technologies such as countdown displays are causing difficulties for people with low vision due to lack of color contrast, for example, and whereas these new pedestrian signals are being widely used in major cities today, and whereas the proliferation of quiet cars and hybrids poses an additional range of potentially dangerous circumstances. Now, therefore, be it resolved. That the American Council of the Blind take the following steps. One, update the Pedestrian Safety Handbook and publish a third edition within the next year. This process should include input from ACB's Pedestrian Safety Specialist Staff Person, ACB's Environmental Access Committee Representative, who use white canes, guide
Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
It's been moved. If I can have the mic, please. The committee has moved. It's been duly seconded.
Now he's coming through.
All right. You guys, I need a mic.
Mr. Chairman, while they're trying to straighten this out, this is Marlena. Can I just let the radio listeners know that we know you're not hearing, and we're trying to fix it. I'm getting bombarded by people saying they can't hear. So,
Mr. Chairman, I thank you. I just wanted to alert this body that with regard to the updating of the pedestrian safety handbook, the grant that Chris announced to the convention on Sunday night for $30,000 was specifically for pedestrian safety work, and the primary piece of that was updating of that handbook. So that's already been taken care of.
Mr. President.
Robert A. Jones, Jacksonville, Florida.
Well, as you can see, we are certainly having difficulties here with the audio, and Jay Downer is an audio expert extraordinaire, and he's very much working on this. We're going to take a two-minute recess. We're going to try to do some door prizes, and good grief, I wonder why this happened.
All right, hold on just a moment, and we'll have a door prize.
It seems that this audio from the podium is not working, so that seems to be the deal here.
Oh, my. Okay, we have...
And that's the voice of Michael Melvin.
Vanilla sugar bath and body lotions and other stuff. Gary Patterson, Windsor Heights, are you here? Okay. Gary, can you wave your hand? All right, we got him. And one more door prize. It's a box. Okay, hold on. It is a travel mug with one ice cream coupon. Ben and Jerry's ice cream coupon. Is Cherie McInnes from San Antonio here?
We are trying.
Is Jennifer Knight from Lansdowne, Pennsylvania here?
Trying to help out with this audio situation here, and just
is Byron Lee from Chicago here?
Maybe how much you can hear.
Is Bill Herzog from Minneapolis here? Is Joan Ridgway from Talladega, Alabama
and Barry,
here?
Barry, to answer your MSN question,
can
I
you raise
will
your hand, please.
Attempt to request
a reread
of the resolution. Thanks for asking that.
Am I back on? Oh, I am back on.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Yes, Marlena?
Several listeners have requested a reread of the resolution since they couldn't hear it.
Okay, we can do that. Well, wait a sec. You know, let me ask everybody a question. This is certainly an important project. It's an important item, but our executive director also has indicated to us it's an item that's actually being done.
In the interest of time, would it be acceptable, since this is already underway and being implemented, that we simply take that information and move on?
Mr. President,
I have no objection if this body would like to affirm the resolve clauses of the resolution.
Mr. President.
Chris? Michael?
Michael Byington, yes. I believe that there are a number of elements in that resolution, and I do believe that probably 75% of what the resolution calls for is something that Melanie already has underway. That's good, because that's one that we can definitely report has been worked on and largely done.
Right.
But
right.
There is that other 25 to 40%, and I would certainly urge that we go on with consideration of the resolution. Thank you.
Okay, in that case, just 1 second. And, Jay, you know, there's a lot of fuzziness in the system now, and something is going on. We need to look into it further. I think what we better do for the most orderly business is read the resolution one more time, vote, and then move on.
Chris, could I make one comment, please? Robert A. Jones, Jacksonville, Florida.
Yes.
Since the right turn on red was implemented by the national government back in the 72, 73, I know it was under Nixon's administration, it was always stated right turn on red. I just found out all these years, last year, the state of Florida and 16 other states, that there's also a left turn on red at one-way intersections for the appropriate left-hand turn. And I would hope that this will be taken into consideration. We go back to our states and find out the other states that are having this situation. We're trying in Florida to get legislation. Yeah, I don't know if it'll come to pass, but to hopefully get rid of the right and left-hand turn on red light.
All right, thank you. That's slightly off the topic of the resolution, but thank you for the input. I'd now like to recognize Judy to read the resolution. I hear calls for the floor, but let's get it read so we can move on and discuss the resolution with everybody knowing exactly what it says. Who's got a point of order?
I have a question, so I'll wait.
Oh, can we have order? Yes, I'd love to have order if you guys wouldn't mind. I don't want to be overly demanding here, but we do need the hall to be quiet. Okay, I know it's getting toward lunchtime, but please give us your attention, Judy.
This is Resolution 0710. It's on pedestrian safety, and it's brought to us from ACB of Maryland. Whereas the American Council of the Blind has a long history of leading the nation in pedestrian safety issues, including the publication of 2 editions of the Pedestrian Safety Handbook, parentheses, most recently in April of 2000, close parentheses, and whereas the safety and protection of all pedestrians is of paramount importance, and whereas much new data, adaptive and inaccessible technologies, rules, regulations, and guidelines have been developed and or implemented since 2000, and whereas traffic patterns and intersection design seem to be ever-changing and evolving, and whereas new technologies such as countdown displays are causing difficulties for people with low vision due to lack of color contrast, for example, and whereas these new pedestrian signals are being widely used in major cities today, and whereas the proliferation of quiet cars and hybrids poses an additional range of potentially dangerous circumstances, now, therefore, be it resolved that the American Council of the Blind take the following steps. 1. Update the Pedestrian Safety Handbook and publish a 3rd edition within the next year. process should include input from ACB's pedestrian safety specialist staff person, ACB's environmental access committee, representatives who use white canes, guide dogs, and people with low vision. Two, other stakeholders such as orientation and mobility specialists, traffic device manufacturers, members of other disability organizations, and any professionals in related fields that this group deems valuable in the successful completion of this work should also be consulted. Three, additional particular attention should be given to methods of achieving public education outreach to both the disabled and non-disabled communities. The committee recommends a due pass.
Mr. President,
who seeks the floor?
Sean Pipps of Montana.
Yeah, Sean.
I just have a point of clarification. With the word hybrid in there and then the word quiet cars, what constitutes a quiet car? Is there a decibel level that's been set? Or?
You know, Sean, I'm not an expert in this. I don't think so, really.
Point of information.
I think that it's a generic term, and it's probably going to get more directly defined
Mr.
in the
Chairman.
Next 2 to 5 years. Melanie, can you respond to that, or Pat Beattie?
Yes, and I can also, I think, well, let me respond and then make a suggestion. The big issue that we are concerned about is the fact that so many of the hybrid vehicles do not make any sound at all when they are idling, and that it takes, what, a couple of seconds for them to be audible once they start. And so what happens is you don't even know there's a car that you need to be listening for sitting in the intersection. And so you haven't got anything to be focused on when you're waiting for the walk interval to start. Mike Byington is standing here asking me if he can make a comment, and I said, ask the chair. But he's at the same microphone as I am.
Well, you know, yes, Michael, although I would like to move this resolution forward and do at least one more before we adjourn.
Mr. Chairman.
Recess for the day.
Very quickly.
yes, Michael.
And I asked Melanie because I almost bowled her over, not realizing she was in front of the microphone ahead of me here. Right, I was looking right over the top of her head. Quiet cars not only involve hybrids, but there is a new classification of vehicles called city cars, or officially dubbed neighborhood electric vehicles, that you basically plug in at night like a wheelchair, but in the next day they'll run up to 25, 30 miles an hour through neighborhood areas for about 40 miles, and they never make any sound. In fact, they advertise that that's one of the advantages to them. And as those become more and more popular in gated communities, suburbs, etc., we're going to be dealing not only with quiet cars that don't make sound sometimes, but not only with the hybrid cars, but also the quiet car that never makes a sound, idling or moving.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman. Pat Sheehan.
Mr. Chairman. Who am I hearing? Charlie Hodge and Pat Sheehan?
And Sean Pipps.
Is there a third person?
Sean Pipps of Montana.
Ken Stewart.
Fourth person.
Sean Pipps.
You guys, all right. Charlie, you're recognized.
Yes,
please be brief.
Quickly. In one of the whereas, it says that the safety and protection of pedestrians is, I think the word should be are. Well, it's hard.
Safety is.
It's a tense.
I will now recognize Ken Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just want to reassure the body that the term quiet car is a generally accepted generic for any motor vehicle which can operate some or all of the time without the sounds produced by an internal combustion engine. So it is a term of art. It's understood, and I think it covers, as Michael says, the other categories, and there will be more in the future, too, hybrids and others. So I think quiet cars is quite appropriate. So,
thank you, Ken. Pat Sheehan, you're recognized.
Thank you. The two parts of this resolution that I think are important, of course, the update of the pedestrian safety handbook, but plus the education, outreach, and awareness that goes along with this whole resolution. I think that needs to be considered also.
Sean Pipps, Montana.
Very well. Are we prepared to vote?
Yes.
Mr. President.
Very good. All right. I hear Carla calling for the floor.
No, it's the chair.
Oh. I got to get this right. And a gentleman?
Yeah, Sean Phipps of Montana again.
Yes.
I guess I would just ask that having the word hybrid and quiet car, are we not just saying the same thing twice and being hybrid is included in quiet cars?
Not necessarily. And remember, this discussion and the resolution is all going to be taken by our great staff in D.C., Melanie, Phil, others, and they're going to work this up into a new pedestrian handbook that I am positive will address these issues. All in favor of the resolution, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Resolution is adopted unanimously.
Mr. President.
Yes.
This is Pat Beatty with a little bit of information that's very relevant to this resolution. For those of you who would like to get the latest information on the status of all of these accessibility issues and pedestrian safety issues and transportation issues, and also to be able to ask questions about how to get these things done in your own community, please come to the CCLBI Environmental Access Committee session on these advocacy issues from 1:30 to 3:30 in Skyway.
Very good. Very good. Thank you, Pat. Judy, do we have one more short one?
I don't know about short. This one may be relatively short. This one is 0717, and it's from Viva. It's Veterans Affairs Accessible Correspondence. Whereas the Department of Veterans Affairs provides services to thousands of veterans who are blind or visually impaired. And whereas these veterans receive correspondence including, but not limited to, letters about their benefits, appointment reminders, surgical preparation and treatment instructions, and information about medical conditions only in regular print, and whereas the failure to provide correspondence in a format that satisfies the veterans' needs violates federal law. Now, therefore, be it resolved that this organization, in conjunction with its affiliate, Visually Impaired Veterans of America, VIVA, demand that the Department of Veterans Affairs comply with its legal obligations by providing correspondence and other printed materials to veterans who are blind or visually impaired in accessible formats, and be it further resolved that a copy of this resolution be sent to the Honorable Jim Nicholson, Secretary of Veterans Affairs. The committee recommends a due pass.
Very well. You've heard the recommendation of the committee. It's been duly seconded. Hearing no calls for the floor, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. The resolution is adopted. Now then, I'm about to recognize Carla for some announcements. And we may have another door prize or two before we recess for the day. Please remember, tomorrow, elections beginning at 9:15. Be here to vote. Please also bear in mind we must adjourn by 5 p.m. tomorrow, and it will be my intention tomorrow to move us along as expeditiously but as fairly as I can move us along. I will ask that the standing rules be attended to tomorrow. Few individuals shouldn't engage in a lot of debate, please. That won't help us move forward. Judy, how many resolutions do we have left? We don't necessarily need an absolute number, but
Within two or three, how many do we have to do tomorrow? Carla, are you at a mic?
I am.
All right. Why don't you go ahead and do your announcements, and
maybe
we can get a count on resolutions before we recess for the day.
Okay. All right. First of all, a little more information on the banquet tables. I want to remind you from Pam at the information desk that you need to reserve your tables. If you wish to reserve a table, you need to do so by 2 p.m. today. And in that process, you must have the names for the 8 people who will be sitting at your table. Also, Pam will be able to give you your number for your table. So if you haven't received the number for your reserved table, please go by the information desk and get that information from Pam. Banquet tickets are still on sale at registration. And when you purchase your ticket, be sure that you do select the entree because the tickets will be color-coded tomorrow night. You will put your ticket on the table, and that is what will determine what kind of plate you will receive. So it's very important that you don't forget tickets, because no ticket and no plate. The choices are roast beef, walleye, fish, chicken, or a vegetarian. I need to correct a mistake that was brought to my attention this morning, and I thank Missouri very much for bringing it to my attention. The Missouri caucus is in room IJ as printed in the program. So please make note of that, as printed in the program. The Southwest States caucus is in Greenway G, and the Mid-South caucus is in DE. The president's meeting is in AB. And I had inadvertently stated that Missouri was in AB yesterday, so I do apologize, Missouri, and thank you very much. Also, a reminder about the NLS Music Services Focus Group this afternoon at 5 o'clock in Greenway C. And the Durward K. McDaniel First Timers Reception is in 2411. Finally, I want to remind you that dinner at the cafe tonight is the roast turkey, the hot roast turkey, and roasted potatoes and gravy. So I think, Mr. President, that concludes all of my announcements at this time. Thank you very much.
Mr. President. I'm quite excited about the banquet tomorrow night. You know, I think we're awfully lucky to have a member of the House of Lords from the UK who is totally blind.
Yeah.
The president of the European Blind Union and the chief executive officer of the Royal National Institute for the Blind speak to us. If you haven't got a banquet ticket yet, I would really recommend you do so.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, who's the gentleman?
Ray Campbell.
Ron Melloman.
Illinois.
Okay.
I don't mean to, this is real quick. This is Ray, and Byron Lee's name was called for a door prize. He is working at ACB Radio, so I think he should get one.
Who's that?
Yeah.
Byron Lee. Byron Lee. His name was called earlier. He is working down at ACB Radio. I just talked to him.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Ron Melloman.
I think we could arrange to have that happen, can't we, Michael? Ron, you're recognized.
Thank you. You know what I'm going to report on, except I want to categorically deny the accusations that I gave up sex to go fishing. That
point noted.
That is not true. I gave up sex to sign people up for the MMS program.
That's what I like.
That we are now, and I've still got some appointments. We are now at $6,480.
Yeah.
And this afternoon is we will be in the Prior Lake room again. This is the last afternoon we'll be up there. But I have my cell phone in my pocket, and I can go anywhere you need me to go. Thank you,
Mr. President.
If I may.
Yes.
This is Robert A. Jones. Once again, I'd like to make a brief appeal. There's some of us who would like to go to the early breakfast tomorrow morning at First Baptist Church. We're meeting downstairs in the main lobby here at the Hyatt at 6:30, leaving sharply at 6:30. Try to get over there, and we're looking for volunteers who would assist those of us who would need assistance. And for those of you who will be volunteering to help us, I'll be more than happy to pay for your breakfast.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Bob. Thank you. The lady?
Mr. President?
Yes.
This is Dee Clayton from ACBDA. We have our drawing we'd like to do sometime before we adjourn.
And Mr. President?
Okay. Dee, get ready to do it before we adjourn today or tomorrow?
Today.
All right, get ready.
Mr. President.
Cindy, you're recognized.
Well, thank you. You recognize my voice. I just want to remind everybody of the candidates forum tonight. It is at 7 o'clock. It is in this room. And it is an opportunity for us to hear from all of the candidates. And there will be some specified questions from the Board of Publications. But we also welcome your questions as well. And hope lots of people will attend tonight, the candidates forum, here at 7 p.m. Thank you.
Just a reminder that will be streamed on ACB Radio Mainstream at 0 hours UTC. We're starting 0 hours UTC for the candidates forum later on today.
Are we ready? I'm ready for the drawing whenever you're ready, Chris.
Okay, Dee, let's have your drawing for the ACB Diabetics in Action raffle.
Okay.
I guess you guys are going to pull
it. It's for $25, and the winner is Dee Clayton.
Well, no wonder she wanted to do it.
That's why she wouldn't let me announce it. Okay, the second prize is $75.
All right.
And the winner
is... No.
He's trying to read it.
Michael, please get ready with the door prize.
Mark Gooders. Who sold the ticket? Okay, it passed from California because Pat Wolf sold. And the $100 and the final prize is...
Carol Cole.
And who sold that one?
That one is by Marilyn.
Sold by Marilyn Lutter.
All right. Very good. Congratulations, winners. I'm feeling even more optimistic about being out of here at 5 tomorrow. We have between 15 and 20 resolutions to take care of tomorrow.
Mr. President.
I think we can do that. And we'll also try and get some other committee reports and so forth put in as well. Michael, do you have a door prize?
I have a door prize.
Wonderful.
First of all, we did give Byron a door prize, so that's taken care of.
Very good. Thank you for that.
So we have the Illinois Council of the Blind gave a one-year subscription to the Illinois Braille Messenger. Lucy Trebiglia of Albuquerque, are you here?
All right.
Can you raise your hand?
Congratulations, Lucy.
All right, we got Lucy. We have one more of the same thing, that Braille Messenger. Vernon Daigle from Louisiana. Are you here? All right. And our final door prize for today will be $25 from the Badger Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. Vicki Vogt from Watertown, are you here?
Vicki, are you here?
Massachusetts.
I know she's at the convention. Massachusetts, is Vicki here?
No!
Oh, shucks.
Well, I have the feeling this next person is here. Is Ray Campbell. Ray Campbell from Illinois.
Mr. President.
Vernon won the second messenger. He's not here. If he's here, please raise his hand.
Because okay, we are good. Go have lunch. Enjoy the rest of the convention and all of that wonderful stuff. Thanks.
Well, there we go. That wraps up our convention coverage.
I just want to remind everyone real quick to come out and support the students tonight and join us for NABS Comedy Night. It's going to be a really wonderful, awesome time, and you need something to relieve your stress after the candidates forum and before we have all of our business tomorrow. And we will be selling raffle tickets tonight before the drawing, and we have some raffle tickets here right now if you want to come to the NABS table at the back right of the room. Thank
all
you.
Right. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Please be here tomorrow promptly at 8:30.
Well, we've had some very interesting resolutions. The one on silent cars, we're having the same thing in the UK. All these new cars that you can't hear. They give you no warning they're approaching, and they're going to have to do something about that. That's not quite the end of our coverage, because I have here an interesting interview that was done with HumanWare, and that will come up following this.
This is Ronnie Millsap, and I'm proud to sponsor this year's ACB Radio coverage of the 2007 American Council of the Blind Convention.
Okay, we're back, and we're kind of roving the exhibit hall again, and I've just run into Phil Rantz of HumanWare, and I kidnapped him and said, we have to talk.
Which is quite true. I have been accosted by Rachel, and I'm here to answer her questions and give you a little bit of an update on HumanWare.
That's exactly what I wanted to do. You've
preempted.
HumanWare is a big time sponsor. We had at the time of this recording, we had a keynote address from Richard Mander last night at our general session, and HumanWare has been a big supporter and a big sponsor of ACB Radio, so we wanted to make sure and talk to you a little bit about what's up with HumanWare and all the new things that are out and what you see happening in the future. I know there's a lot of cool things. I just saw the stream.
Yes, the stream is probably the hit of the show. We've only just recently launched this product. It has been developed and manufactured by HumanWare Canada. It is a continuation of the existing Victor line of product, and the stream is a pretty cool little toy. It's very pleasing in appearance. It's silver with rubberized dark charcoal in color, and it allows you to play DAISY formatted material as well as text formatted MP3, record your own recordings and listen to those as a playback, and it's all the size of a pack of cards. It's a very small, very powerful device, and it runs, you store the material on an SD card in it, and that SD card can be up to 8 gigabytes, so you can actually store a phenomenal amount of material on this. It has a user replaceable battery, which is
That's really nice.
It's there's controversy on how many times it will recharge and deplete, and the manufacturers are telling us that it'll do it 400 times. So there's a lot of use in that battery, and the battery life is 15 hours. So
you're counting now. You're on about time number 27.
That's right. So, they last 15 hours, so they can do a couple of days at the show without seeing a charger. And it's really good, because on those long-haul flights, if you're flying down to New Zealand or Australia, or even just across the country, it's nice to know that you can listen to your book without interruption for a long time without having to worry about the battery.
You don't ever do that, do you? Never, not at all.
Yeah, not down to New Zealand, no. So, have you actually held it, Rachel?
Yeah. I got a chance to take a look at it.
It's 6 ounces. It is roughly the size of a full pack of cards, and it's been really received well at the show. Obviously, we're selling at the show special, which is 5% off and free shipping. If you do buy it at the show, you do have the opportunity of winning it. We are going to give away 1 in 10 free.
Am I eligible?
Yes.
Everyone is
eligible.
All right.
As long as you've got a credit card, come and see us. but we're getting a lot of positive responses from the people that have seen it. it will be able to have a free patch in about the end of August, where you will also be able to do RFBND and some other material which we can't talk about right now.
Yeah, that was my next question as to, you know, everybody's wondering about the RFBND and you know, that.
RFBND are working with Canada to get their code onto it and make it accessible for their material. That will happen. And obviously there's some other significant libraries in the US which are going through that process as well at the moment, which we just have to be patient.
Yeah. What about Audible books?
That is also going to be at the same time as RFBND.
Okay, great. Great.
We're pretty well excited by that. Yes, you're
USB.
USB, so you can download from your computer to your SD card in the device, which keeps it all nice and functional.
Nice. Nice.
So it's a really pleasing package to both the eye and to feel. It's got a built-in sleep function as well. So for those nights that you're listening to your book and you know you're going to nod off, you can set it to where you want to nod off to. So we're very, very proud of this as a piece of assistive technology, and we think it's going to be a real winner.
I like it. I like the looks of it. It's nice.
And it's carrying on that theme which we've done with the Empower, the Trekker, and the rest of our products, which is the silver and grey theme with the little bit of human wear splash of orange on it, which has been really good. So that's the Victor Stream, and that's probably the showstopper. That's where we've got a lot of attention. But we're also talking, obviously, about the rest of our products.
Speaking of the Empower, you've got some new things coming up with the Empower?
We have. We're due for the next release of KeySoft. It's going to be KeySoft 7.5 for all those that think there's an 8. There is an 8 that's coming, but it's not this time. This is probably a little bit sooner than we wanted to issue the next version of KeySoft, but there's been a change coming with the SSL email encryption system. So we really wanted to get SSL solution out before the suppliers start to change over their networks, because obviously that would leave our users in the position that they couldn't access the internet for some of the functionality that they need.
Right.
So that's going to be released, we are hoping, early August. In reality, it's probably going to be late August, but that will be the next SMA for the Braille Note line of products for both the Classic, the PK, and the Empower. It is worth the note that for the Classic, this will be the last SMA issued for the Classic line of product.
And so beyond that, Classic will be at that point as updated as it possibly can,
yes,
given the hardware limitation.
You're 100% correct. KeySoft 7.5 will be the last available upgrade for the Classic, simply because the amount of space that is available and the hardware limitations. You did right.
Yeah. Okay, great.
So the other fun thing that we're going to see is that it'll have a built-in playlist support for the media player, so you can be your own DJ. Instead of being committed to how your songs are there and having to do each individual song, you can go through and highlight the songs that you want to listen to in the order you want to listen them.
All right.
Which is going to be pretty fun.
You know, we as blind people are so lucky, you know, that we have PDAs Plus. I always say, you know, that there is a PDA Plus, and that we get more than what standard PDAs have. We expect so much out of our PDAs. You know, most people would say, oh, you know, I just want to do contacts. And here as blind people, yeah, we want our audio and we want our playlist. And, you know, HumanWare is very responsive to put the needs of the individuals first and really.
When I first came to this industry and they kept on referring to the Braille Note as a note taker, it's probably a bad classification of the product, because it does so much more than just note taking. Obviously, note taking is a core function for the unit, and that's how it's used, but the other programs or the other options that are available within that unit are so much wider than the term would suggest.
I don't go anywhere without it.
Exactly. And it's really rewarding when you're at a show like ACB, apart from you're able to meet the users and have good dialogue with them, get some really good feedback, see what their concerns are. It's just a lot of fun just meeting people and chatting them, and it's always nice to see all the Braille Notes around their shoulders as they bump along. So, you know, it's a rewarding experience attending these shows. It's good fun.
Now, I might be putting you on the spot a little bit. Do you know anything about, since the Sendero GPS runs on the Braille Note, do you know anything about what they're doing with that one? That might be putting you on the spot just a bit, but Yes, you have. Okay. Fair enough.
I don't know what the next upgrade out of Sendero is going to be for the Brownout GPS, and I must admit it's, I should know,
well,
and I apologize for not knowing that.
Well, you know, I probably should too.
it's been a busy old time. For HumanWare, as Richard alluded to in his keynote speech, we've just changed owner, and it's an exciting time for us because we've obviously had a long period of due diligence, a lot of special reporting, a lot of special budgeting projects that we've been undertaking. So it's sucked up a lot more time than I would have liked. But the new owners are really passionate about what we do in the industry, and it's really aligned the goals between the owners and the management team. As Richard had said, a lot of our shareholders, which a lot of people would know, were ex-employees. They were getting on in years, and they had a different desire for what they needed from their investment. And the company needed to reinvest. We want to put all our money straight back in and carry on developing the products that we are and growing the market like we are. And to have that goal congruence between the owners now and the management team is really exciting.
Yeah, I think that's great. You know, and I want to say, you know, on behalf of ACB Radio and ACB, if I can take that privilege to say that we just really appreciate the support that we've always gotten from HumanWare and the sponsorship. And, you know, it's really nice to know that the access technology companies that we work with are so into what the organizations are doing and, you know, are visible and really looking out to find out what the user's needs are. And we really appreciate that very much.
Thank you for that, Rachel. But, you know, it's really important to us, and the CCB did a great job pointing out the deficiencies in the industry, and especially for us as a company, because we need that feedback. We need to stop occasionally, listen to what the market's saying, look at what we do and make it better. And we've tried really hard over the last year to change how we do business internally, change how we treat our customers. And it's, yes, it may sound silly, it's right down to the little stuff. It's right making sure that everyone in Concord has had blindness training, how to lead a blind person. They get their turn with the blindfolds and you walk them into furniture. You know, they need to be able to empathize and understand our customer base and how we work. So by just doing that, we've really created a much wider awareness. We've employed a lot more people that use our products, which is really good. And it's helping us as a company understand what our users' needs are and address those.
Well, one of the things that was said last night, too, were some stats about how call times have really been, call wait times, rather, have really, really been cut down and as to what people might remember having been in the past. And so I know that you all are really working hard on making the whole experience, whether it be tech support or purchasing product or whatever, to be the best that the end users can have.
We've really worked hard on doing that. We've talked to a lot of people. We've heard what they've said. Obviously, people didn't like ringing in for tech support and having it cost them a fortune while they waited on hold, which is not an unreasonable request. So we do have an R800 number now for tech support, and you should get a response there. Yeah, reality is, though, some things do go wrong. Sometimes someone's out sick or there is a hole. So 100% of the time, it's not going to be perfect. Occasionally, the odd person will get caught where they're not getting a response or there's a training underway and they're not hearing that message. So we need the ACB members or anyone that listens to this and they have a problem is to communicate that problem back to us. We can't fix something if we don't know it's there. So definitely keep up the great job that you've been doing in communicating to us with your concerns, because that helps us improve what we're doing. And we're very conscious that a lot of people with assistive technology rely on that just for their day-to-day lives, their employment, their education, and we really want to streamline the process and make it as good as possible, make the service as good as possible.
Okay. Well, if anyone wants to contact you all and get more information or maybe would like to look into purchasing the Victor Stream or the Braille Note or whatever, how can they get in touch with you all?
You can always phone us in the US on our 0800 number, which is 1-800-722-3393. And you can visit our website and see what's new on there. We've just recently changed our website to make it more accessible to our users, as well as just make it an easier website for navigation. So obviously we'd always want to hear your feedback on those sorts of things to see if they're easy or hard. So please visit us, ring us, keep in touch, and definitely consider the Victor Stream, because we're really excited by that, and they're selling like hotcakes.
All right. Thank you so much, Phil Rance. Always great to talk with you, whether we were at ACB convention or some other show or whatever. So
exactly, Rachel. Sure. Great to see you again, and thank you for this opportunity.